Bradford.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of The Week in Hand. I hope you've all had a good week. I'm feeling pretty sore, but we'll get into that. we've got, say hello, Joe.
Hey, everybody.
And we've got a special guest here today. We've got Mr. John Cleaver.
Hello.
Yay, nice to meet you, man. We've never met you before, and I'm proper looking forward. I heard a few stories from Luke, obviously, and we caught a few of them on the podcast. But then, obviously, since then, I've been following you, man, and I've been enjoying following you.
All right, yeah, cheers. Yeah, I enjoyed the podcast with Luke, so yeah, I'm looking forward to this today.
Did you know how much of Luke did you know then before you heard that? Did you know he was a fighter beforehand?
Yeah, so I met Luke probably 3 years ago, and he was doing my brother-in-law's tattoos. I needed someone to do my tattoos, and Colin introduced me to Luke, and he did some fantastic artwork for me, and yeah. We just hit it off. I mean, like, yeah, we just straight away hit off. But I think he was in between fights at the time, and I didn't really know like his background or history or anything. I just saw the posters up on the wall, and I kind of thought, that looks like him, but I'm not sure. I didn't really dare ask him, to be honest. Like, at that point in time, he'll put his nails on that photo, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought, like, you want to run away from his shot without pain, to be honest. Because he'd catch you and he'd probably give you a good idea.
He's so inconspicuous, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like...
The one where he's got that photo that he looks like a hobo or a tramp or something. He's got, like, a beard.
With Manachai. He fought Manachai at Yokao, and he's like, just like that.
Yeah.
He was a mess before that fight.
Yeah,
he was. An absolute disgrace. He must drive Alexis mad, because I don't think she's really keen on the hobo look.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he told me something like he did it for some psychological edge or something. He wanted to just look like he just pitched up from the street. And then he got it all shaved off, didn't he?
Yeah.
For the fight.
I think he weighed in, and then obviously weigh-ins the day before. And then the night of it, boom, the morning of or something, like, I just shaved it all off, cut all his hair, shaved his beard down, and boom, just came in. But he's known for that, though. Because he's curly, isn't he? Like, he grows his hair right curly and everything, grows it all out. And then night of the fight, boom, he comes in just looking completely different.
Yeah, like the same guy.
But that was the biggest contrast I've ever seen. I've only known him, I think it's about 6 years or something like that. I've only known him about 6-7 years. But in that time, like that was the worst time I'd ever seen. I say worst because he's going to listen to this, but like, and I don't want him to beat me up. But it's just kind of like the most.
It made
hobo.
Me smile, man. Honestly, it made me laugh at that.
But yeah, so yeah, you met him for a tattoo. You got him to tattoo.
Yeah, he's done a load of work for me since. And yeah, what a guy! He's truly humble.
Yeah.
And literally, like, I found out so much from knowing him for so long, listening to that podcast you did with him. Mm. And I had no idea, because you'd have to drag it out of him to kind of get all of that about what he's done. I love the story about he went to uni to study Thai language just so he could get out there and beat people up for a year. I mean, that's the kind of psychology of the guy, isn't it? I mean, so great respect. I'm so pleased he's going back to fighting. I think he must have had an itch he wanted to scratch.
Yeah, I think it's weird with Luke. I think it's got that. I think this will be it. I think now he's got this itch, I think this is it now, and he's going to pump everything he can into it. And then this will be his last throw at it. But I'd like to see myself have quite a few fights this time. I'd like to see him settle into it, train, get this first fight under his belt back again, and then boom, train again, because he's got it. He's got to get his upper body strength back, because obviously he spent so much time and his legs are like...
Yeah, you waste away.
Yeah, his legs are machines, aren't they? Mm. So it's like now his legs are... Because he's always run before, but like the idea of like now he needs to get that strength back, upper body, because you could, you know, working
his competitiveness
in the
though, and because you asked him to go to Parkrun, didn't you, I think? Was that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then
you
beat him and you were like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And then that's triggered like a spark that set him off down a running course.
It's funny, like, so... Your worst enemy, if you will, when you're racing against someone, can also become, you know, one of your best friends. And because you have a mutual respect and admiration for anyone, I mean, he's a grafter, right? He works so hard. And when he does focus on something like when I do, he's obsessive.
Yeah.
So whether it's him learning to play saxophone, whether it's him fighting, whether it's him getting that Grand Prix in his head, and no matter what, he was kind of going to win that thing. And there was only me going to get in his way.
I think you gave him a run for his money, literally.
I'm still smarting, if I'm honest.
Said that.
He said...
are you quite competitive as well, then?
I am. Probably... in some respects, maybe unhealthily so. I don't know.
There's more I want to ask you about that anyway, man. Get that right up to you. Try and get your artist to get that right up to you when you do it. Yeah, but there's more I want to ask you with that anyway, because there's a ton of questions in terms of... because I think the one thing I see about you, man, is your work volume. And I think that's what gets you to where you... where I think that's what gets anyone to where they want to be who wants to compete at the level you're competing at. You know what I mean? You can't just play here and there. It's got to be like, I'm all in and I'm going to push my body right to the limit. You know, so it's like...
Where did you get started, John? What triggered the... you're a runner, yeah?
Take that from like when you were back from a kid. Have you always done this, man? You always done something physical?
No, I used to hate sport. When I was at school, it used to be, we would do cross country at school, and a few of my mates would take the opportunity to bunk off. So we used to have to do a 2-lap course where we were, and we'd bunk off after the first lap. We'd sneak off. A friend of mine's house was like just on the course, so we'd go to his house, bunk off for 15 minutes. Wait until everyone else came around and then we'd rejoin. I mean, like, I used to suffer terribly with, like, stitches and things like that when I was younger. And, yeah, I never had any inkling for it whatsoever. I used to hate sports day, useless at football, which was something we were obsessive about at school. I used to play it, but it wasn't until probably... I remember it quite distinctly. So my motivation came from... probably about 2021, and I used to have to wear a suit for work. I don't wear a suit anymore. But I went into Burton's in Burnley to get a new suit, and I tried a suit on, which was a 34. And obviously, I'm a small friend, I'm only 5'7½", maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a 36-inch waist, and I thought, enough is enough.
Oh, wow. Like,
The works canteen had destroyed me. I mean, it was a brilliant... amazing food, though, right?
So
you don't think about things, really. I think it's the point when you get a car, you suddenly become quite lazy. and I was just eating, like, probably curry, chips and rice for lunch every single day. And your metabolism's firing, obviously, when you're younger, but then you get to a point in your early 20s and you think it's just sticking.
It's coming, yeah.
and it's not going
can't
anywhere.
Keep this up.
So anyway, I thought something's got to change here in my lifestyle. So I just started jogging and cycling just to lose the weight. And I would do it. I signed up for a friend of mine, Martin. We used to sign up every year to go and do the Great North Run. And that used to be our major thing. So I think my first Great North Run was probably in 2007. And we did it every year from like 2007, 2008, 2009.
And just primarily that as well. You didn't do any 10Ks or 5Ks in between.
Did some, but didn't really race that often.
Yeah.
But we really did that to go to Newcastle for a night to get drunk, if I'm honest.
That's the real reason.
I'm going to do the run, though.
It was always a great idea, right? So what would happen is we'd go up there and we'd have this big plan of having a big night in Newcastle afterwards, but we were both got to like 8 or 9 o'clock at night and we were both finished. So after a couple of pints in the afternoon and stuff, the only thing we were fit for was go to bed. So, but I did love running, and I moved jobs, and then probably a couple of years later, I got big into cycling.
Okay.
So doing 100-mile plus cyclosportives.
Oh, wow. And, road biking.
Road biking. Yeah. It was a boss of mine, and he kind of inspired me to go and do L'Étape. It's called L'Étape de Tour, and it's basically every year when the Tour de France goes through, they designate one or two of the tour routes for a cyclosportive. And okay, so you go to France and you actually go on in the footsteps of the tour riders.
No way.
So the one I did was, I think, 140-mile leg. I was paranoid all that year. So because in July in central France, it was notoriously really, really hot.
Yeah.
So like to prepare for that.
You went on the sunbeds. They went sunbeds every day.
Yeah. Yeah. So like my paranoia was dealing with heat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like impossible to train for heat in this country pretty much because it's so hit and miss in summer. So
yeah,
I got my turbo set up. I put it in my conservatory, like just trying to like generate heat all the time. And then when we went out there, we had a beautiful day the day before, and I'm cursed with bad weather when I do these events. And the next day, literally a storm ripped through.
It was
so cold. And these things aren't small things. Like you're probably doing at least 3,000 meters of climbing.
Jesus,
so big days out.
Yeah,
7-8 hours. And we got out, and we were probably only about an hour in, and we saw all these French cyclists and Italian cyclists just coming back. They'd had enough. The cold was too much.
The Brits are here, though.
They were done. And I remember, you know, one moment of kindness, and this is going back a few years now, was I remember there was a French gentleman in a French village, and he opened up his barn. And he put the heating on and made everyone a brew.
Yeah.
No and I way. Got to the point where my chain had fallen off just before that, and my hands were so cold because I'd only brought summer gear out, right?
So you're in,
I've got my short finger gloves, and it's bitterly cold. I've got a tiny cag on. I've not got any base layers. I'm literally frozen cold.
Wow.
So this chap invited us in. We got a cake. We got a brew. Got my chain back on and got going again. And the two people I went with, they actually jibbed at that point. So they jibbed at about 60 miles in. And I thought, I haven't come all this way. I haven't trained for 6 months.
Yeah.
Come all the way, the cost, the expense, the time, whatever, to go and jib. So went in there, got myself sorted, and then carried on going. And within 10 miles, luckily, the sun started shining.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. And I was like, I was so glad that I persevered and pushed through that when it's just...
Yeah,
so easy to quit.
Yeah. It's like the perfect place to quit.
I mean,
yeah.
like you were given a treat there, weren't you? You know what I mean? You stuck in, and then it's almost like you get given a slice of magic, don't you, for your hard work? Just like, oh,
yeah. Kind of it was very much like that. And I know how I would have felt if I had have quit.
Yeah.
I'd have struggled to live with that.
Yeah.
I think the only time I have quit was I attempted the Fred Witten, which is in the Lake District, and that's a cyclosportive. That's
right.
You do every single climb in the Lake District over about 100 odd miles it is.
Oh my
and this
God.
Thing's epic.
Wow.
Like the mountains in France and the mountains in the lakes are two different things.
Mm-hmm. So sorry, just to go back. Yeah. So when you were training for the cycle in France, this is your first real long distance,
yeah,
ride?
Endurance activities. Yeah.
Okay. So what did you do for your training for that then?
Just mileage. I mean, there's lots and lots, especially in the like around Buxton and that area and Cheshire, where there's lots of like 100-mile sportives.
Yeah.
You kind of build it up like. They start probably in April, where you can like join and do a 60-miler, and then you can maybe do an 80-miler.
Yeah.
And you just start to build. And one of them is like the Cheshire Cat, which is like 100-miler with quite a lot of climbing in it as well. So you kind of just build it up all the time. See, cycling is really difficult because of the dedication of time it needs.
Yes.
There's no shortcuts, right? It's pointless, in my opinion, going out for a cycle ride of any less than probably 3 hours.
Right, yeah.
There's no benefit.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Within your cardio, you mean?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So to work your body, I mean, because it's a lot less hard on you than running is. Like, you probably get the same benefit of a 40-minute run for 3 hours on a bike.
Right.
You've got to be out there. And it's very easy to go and do a 2 or 3 hour bike,
but it's
when you start getting to your 7 and 8 hours, that's when it's a new level. So, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Is it sort of, you know, when you get into them 7, 8 hours, is it muscle fatigue or is it you're out of breath or what's getting you at that point?
I think you build a decent base over time. So you build like a decent aerobic base. And personally, like, I find that my muscles will give out before my aerobic base will give out. So we're kind of hopping around a bit. But
yeah,
Ironman's the longest event I've done. So that was What did I finish that in? Just over 12 hours.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
So that's the best example I can give you. So
yeah.
It was muscle fatigue, definitely was definitely the enemy. And you've got to try and counteract that. And similar with marathon, you want to run marathon fast, muscle fatigue is what's going to get you first.
Yeah. And your psychology of dealing with that muscle fatigue and knowing that that's the thing you're pushing for. It's not your cardio endurance. I don't think that you're challenging there to a certain extent, because once you get to a certain level, I'd found in a certain sense, or with people like yourself, elite athletes, I think it's like the idea of like, no, actually, it's not my cardio endurance. It's my psychology of my muscular endurance, you know, joints aching, things starting to hurt, and you overwhelming yourself, not understanding that, say with Goggins, your mind will push through that muscular, you know what I mean? Your body will keep pushing. You know this more than anyone. I'm just talking to you about it. And it's your mind overpowers your muscle. It's mind over muscle, isn't it? And to a certain degree with that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I listened to a podcast from a guy called, I think it's Colin O'Brady, who's the first solo person to cross Antarctica.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was on Rogan. I listened to that at the weekend. And I think he described it the best way, that your most important muscle is the muscle that's in between your ears.
Oh, yeah, and, remember that podcast? I love that
that saying, because your psychology and how you set yourself up is just so important.
Yeah.
And going back to this kind of trade-off, like, if you want to run a fast 5K time, you can very much set off very hard and end up blowing. Definitely, because you're getting straight into that kind of anaerobic threshold where you're building up lactic acid, and you can be blowing. And if you go too hard, you don't have time to catch it back up. Uh-huh. You've probably blown it. If in the first mile you've gone way too hard, then you've done basically. Mm-hmm. You're not going to catch that back up. With a marathon or these longer distances, there isn't that panic to kind of want to push yourself so hard into that. Ideally, you want to build yourself up so that your heart rate and your aerobic threshold is, how would I describe it? You're just on that limiter, if that makes sense. So if there's a line where you draw where you go from aerobic to anaerobic, when you're running marathon, you need to train yourself so that if your target pace is, say, 6-minute miles or whatever, you need to be just underneath that lactic threshold.
Yeah.
And that's what you're training your body to be able to do, to withstand that lactic threshold. And that's where you're going to get be able to hold that speed for longer, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
And then the more and more and more you train at that, the better you'll get a hold in that.
Yeah, and you're feeling it. And feeling it whilst you're out there as well. I reckon that's the thing of not knowing, again, psychologically knowing whether you're actually... Am I feeling all right here? Am I actually, you know, I suppose that's just, my health system.
Do you still go, what happens to me, I don't know if this still happens to you, but through like waves of like in like, I mean, I've only ever done a half marathon, is the longest I've ever run, but I have waves, like the beginning may be hard, the middle becomes easy, and then there's another hard, you know, it's like it comes in waves, does that? So how do you cope with that?
Does it
even happen to you anymore, or do you just know?
It most definitely does. You have like this this voice in the back of your head.
The governor.
The governor, yeah, definitely the governor's. The governor's on you. And and you know what? Sometimes it's healthy to have that governor. In fact, that... it makes you obsessive over the detail.
Definitely.
But on the flip side, it also can neg you out, and you do definitely go through waves, because in a marathon, you kind of... I always find that the first kind of half marathon, and again, it's setting your mind up this, so the first half marathon always, I find, comes really quite easy. And I'll set a target time in my mind. Where do I want to be at 10K?
Where
do I want to be at 10 miles? Where do I want to be at half marathon? And normally I'll hit that.
Yeah.
But everyone says the race doesn't start until 20 miles. So, and you kind of know that.
Yeah.
And then you can go through a lull then and thinking like, how do my legs feel? And they're starting, are they starting to fade? Oh, my hips give me a bit of jip. Or, you know, what's coming along here? Do I need a wee? Do I not need a wee? And you stop, because you've got a lot of time to think, right?
I'm not
talking to anyone.
A shit
you're in
the
your
time,
own head,
yeah.
aren't you?
I'm not talking to anyone either.
I'm not talking, especially in the major marathons. In like, not when I'm racing against Luke, actually, when we're racing through the Grand Prix, we actually be talking to each other as we were going around.
Right.
But you don't have that when you're doing a major marathon. I'm not going to talk to someone who doesn't even, I don't know whether they even speak the same language as me. So, and no one really wants to talk to each other anyway when you're just trying to endure a marathon. So you got a lot of time to think. And,
yeah.
And it's interesting. In certain times, you end up in a flow state where you're just not thinking about anything. You're just gliding.
Boom.
You're just gliding. And you find you'll glide to like 30 miles and then the governor will kick back in again. And
he'll start
having a word with you and start like trying to get in your head. And like, and yeah, and you, there's another cycle. When you get to like 23 miles, that's when actually you think, I got this.
Okay, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, your muscles are hurting you, because if they're not hurting you at 23 miles, you just haven't gone hard enough. You've slacked off.
And okay.
You're going to hurt no matter how hard you train. You're going to hurt.
Yeah.
But you know, you always got this thing in your mind. I'm only a part run away.
I can
do
that
this.
Far.
And you also think like, what's the worst case scenario? My worst case scenario is I'm gonna do this in 21 minutes, and then you look at your watch and think, well, that's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, setting your mind right is really important. And just letting your mind know that this is what's going to happen. You know,
like
when you set an objective and you write it down in 4 months' time. So like, I'll write my objective for like the Berlin Marathon, but I'm planning for that now.
Okay,
till October.
Yeah.
But I'll write down my objective, and my objective is to run a 2:30 marathon.
Right, okay.
So somehow I've got to get 7 minutes from somewhere. So I'm kind of like...
Trying to cut corners and tweak bits.
Yeah, just trying to break it down.
Yeah, have you been there before? Have you done it before Berlin?
Never. But there are a few things, and it only takes a few tweaks, because when you break it down, like 7 minutes over a marathon is only like probably 5 or 10 seconds a mile. And you think, that's doable.
Your fastest... marathon is now...
It's 2:37.
Yeah, right.
So that's what I did in Tokyo.
Was it flat or...
Ish.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I think it's probably about 400 or 500 foot, which isn't a lot over 26 miles.
So when was this, sorry?
This was in back end of February.
Yeah, oh, right, recently.
Recent, man, yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. So you got bad weather for that as well, didn't you?
It wasn't great, yeah. The heavens opened, so... The weather forecast looked like it was going to be dry in the morning, rain in the afternoon, and I thought, oh, bingo, I'm going to get a dry one. And then I opened the curtains in the morning at 6 a.m. to have a look what was going on outside, and it was dry, and I thought, oh, great stuff, brilliant. And I left my... I'd actually prepared the night before. I left my cag out and whatever, because I was going to take that just in case. If nothing else, just to keep warm at the start, because it was still cold.
Yeah.
Still like... 3 to 5 degrees. First,
do you have a bag when you run then, or what, how do you?
No, it just like you just tend to get rid of your gear. I run in a vest anyway. It's got to be like mega cold to not run in a vest, because you generate so much heat when you're going anyway.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So I left that in the hotel. I thought, I don't need that. Fine, crack on. And then I get there, literally as I arrive, the heavens open. I'm like, oh Christ, I'm stuck here now, because you get there about an hour before. And it's pouring down with rain. I'm thinking, I'm gonna get cold here. I'm going to have a problem. That wasn't great planning, because I didn't have anything to keep me warm and dry.
Right, yeah.
Who did you go with?
Me and my wife went over.
Oh, yeah. So
we had a bit of a trip out there. We did Tokyo and we did Kyoto.
No way. Yeah.
Wow,
would you recommend it? Yeah.
Oh, definitely. It's just an amazing place. Tokyo, I think it's the most... populated. It's one of the most, if not the most populated city in the world.
In the world, yeah.
It's intense. So like, you get there after a really long flight. I think it's 12 hours. And we got the bus, I think, from the airport into Tokyo. And we're trying to find our hotel. And they're like, it's so busy. You get so disorientated. Everyone's like pushing. We ended up in rush hour as well. And that was a bit stressful. It's just so busy. Everywhere you walk is really, really busy. But the culture is just amazing.
Yeah.
Everything's just bang on. You know, like, we can't get anything on time in this country. Trains aren't on time. Buses aren't on time. The Met's not on time. Everything's breaking down and falling apart. But they are, like, meticulous. There's never a train that does not arrive bang on when it's supposed supposed to arrive. And the one thing which is amazing, right, I knew I'd landed, because the... have you heard about the toilets in Japan?
Oh man, I've heard a few bits.
Oh my god,
they are amazing, right? So even in public conveniences, They've got.
I need to know now. What's so amazing?
Yeah, they've got heated seats, right?
Yes.
So you've got heated seats. They play music to you.
Wow.
Must be to protect your modesty, I'm assuming.
Just turn this up a little bit. Gonna need some volume on this one.
And they also have jet sprays, right?
Yeah.
There's two different jet sprays. No way. You can imagine one for the ladies.
How far it comes out? Yeah, does it come out like a different distance?
It'll come out.
Yeah.
And it'll give you a good. Give you a good spraying.
It's like a bidet as well.
It's bidet built into this. My God, what an invention this is. It's not like they just have them in like posh hotels, like literally everywhere they've got these things. There must be someone who's tried to actually.
They're probably made there, aren't they?
But they just didn't pass it.
I was thinking, like, how much would one of these cost?
I've only ever seen one of them in a disabled person's house who obviously they had problems with their arms. And they were like, come and look at my toilet. And I'm like, we just stood there like admiring this toilet. Like, wow, that's amazing. It comes out different. For which one do you want to clean? Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And I think they said it was somewhat like 18 grand or something. They're well expensive. Really expensive.
Yeah, they do look dear, but they are amazing. It's a showpiece for your house though, isn't it? That's like, welcome to my toilet.
That's what we did. Before we leave, I need the toilet.
Are you sure? Definitely should go to the toilet.
So you spent most of your time in Tokyo in the toilet then?
Toilet hopping. Yeah. So that was good. But then it does get a bit too much. So we got there on a Thursday. We went to the expo on the Friday. Strangely enough, it was pouring down. And the expo was a bit of a letdown. Normally these expos are brilliant. Like for someone who loves the technology and the running gear or whatever, you go to London, it's got like the whole, take over the whole Excel Centre.
Yeah.
All right, okay, so it was like a runner's expo.
All the gear you could think of, mm-hmm. and the food and nutrition, the trainers, whatever. And you could lose a day in there. My wife wouldn't allow that. She would be very unhappy about that, but she might allow me an hour. But this one was all outside because they've got the Olympic Games going in Tokyo. I think it's in 2020. So for whatever reasons, because of construction going on or whatever, they couldn't host it where they normally host it, but it was all hosted outside.
Yeah.
And like everyone was just getting drenched. It was all intense and whatever. So literally it was a case of get your number and get gone. And then, so that's what we did on the Friday, some food and whatever. And then on the Saturday, did a recce of the start area. What I didn't want to do is get there and start panicking about where do I need to go, what do I need to do, and whatever. So we went there, and again, my wife was very patient.
Does she not run? Is she not a runner?
She does do a bit of running now. Yeah, she does do a bit.
She wasn't doing it with you though. No.
And then it's race day on Sunday, and then you're good for nothing. You know.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
The only thing you're good for is eating and sleeping, really.
Yes, trying to get them calories back in.
Because you're wasted. And then Monday went to Kyoto, and Kyoto was just beautiful. We had 3 days out there before we had to go back. But, yeah, that's like, it's, in the right in the centre, it's got like the city feel, which is great.
Yeah.
I'd describe it a bit like Manchester, but like you just needed to go out 2 miles out from there, and you had it just temples everywhere, beautiful scenery, forestry or whatever. And even got me out walking up in the hills and all that sort of stuff. Legs up there.
I love Japanese art. Obviously, we've been doing tattoos and stuff like that. So it was one of the first things I was ever drawn to as a tattoo artist was Japanese tattoo art, drawing koi fish, dragons, etc. So it's always been a place that I've always wanted to go to. And that, like you were saying there, it's not... I'd like to go to the cities, but like you said, it's almost like you don't have to go far out of the cities until you're like, oh, wow, here we are. You know what I mean? And you see the actual beauty of the temples and, you know, well, pagodas and stuff like that and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, the gardens are just stunning.
Yeah.
Stunning, so just inspirational,
could
yeah.
get lost in them for a day, for a full day absolutely. Just walking around.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it was an amazing experience. Love to have spent longer out there.
Couldn't
get any more time off work. And the only other regret would be I wish we'd have taken Ruby out of school. You know, Ruby, our daughter's 8. You try and do the right things as parents.
Of course,
and we did take her out when I did the Chicago Marathon. But we didn't feel it was right to take her out of school again.
It's a tough decision. I respect you though for making that decision.
To try and fine you now, don't they?
They will fine you. They will fine you. They will fine you if they
take your kid out of school in term time. But it's worth it, isn't it?
But it's a tough one, isn't it? It's a close call. I understand what you're saying. It's like, It's not just the fine. The money's no issue. It's the idea of like I'm taking them out of education, and if it's a vital point in their education, learning, like part of their life, like am I doing the right? Am I making the right decision or not? But then I'm going to take them to Japan, and they're going to see loads of things that no other kid really in their school, in their class, is going to see. You know, but it's like I understand it's hard to make that decision,
and I think as soon as you kind of. It's like any habit, right? You do it once, that's fine. You do it a second time, and then does it become a habit?
Exactly.
And then it becomes acceptable. And I think education is like so important. I didn't work hard enough at school, but I want Ruby to have that,
and
I want her to sort of lead a life that I never had. You know what I mean? And I wish I did now. It was a bad call. We should have done it. So I owe her a trip to Japan now.
That's an excuse to go back, isn't it? Yeah. We need to go back because we didn't take you. Honest. That's
so
the reason
easy
we're going.
To explore, though, because the bullet train literally goes from the top of the island to the bottom of the island. And so you can get to like, and it goes, I think this thing goes like 250 odd miles.
Yeah.
It's nuts how fast it goes.
Yeah.
So within 2 or 3 hours, you can be in somewhere completely different, and it's very easy to explore. But yeah, so definitely some like to go out, you know, maybe not necessarily Japan, but somewhere, you know.
Yeah, so you, like in terms of like, we segued quite a way off there, but I like the idea of, I like doing that though, but because I wanted to ask you about that. But the idea of when you do things like this, you know, like we're talking about cutting time down and all that kind of thing, and you wanted to cut it down by like, what did you say? Was it something like, turns out
seven
about 10
minutes.
Seconds a mile, 10 seconds a mile or something like that. How do you keep yourself while you're in the process of running that marathon? Do you have a tracker? Do you rely a lot on your tracker to a certain degree? How do you find that sometimes works with when you finish? That's exactly what the time you ran it in. You know, as soon as you're setting off, you know, like, boom, right, I'm running. Before you know it, you finish and you think you're making good time. Have you ever finished one and been like, hold on a minute?
So I think there's probably three principles, if you will, around that. First of all, is your preparation leading up to that. You kind of want your race pace to be automatic. You want that throughout your training, really. You want that to be something which is in your muscle memory, right?
Yeah, autonomous.
So when I'm doing my, I changed a couple of things for this particular one because I had to chip off. So I did 2:41 in Chicago, and I wanted to get under that 2:40 mark. So I wanted to, and I wrote down on my plan, I wanted to do 2:37:30.
Okay.
For the literally
that precise.
That's what I wanted to do, and I sat down, and I've got someone who helps me with this planning. And what I decided to do was on my long runs. Luke told you about us using the podium track.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's good is it's because it's pan flat, and it's 1 kilometer in length, and in terms of pacing, there's no variability in there. The only variability is how tired you feel. So it's great. And what I did in every time, I always train right up to a marathon as well. I don't slack off. A lot of people will get to like 20 and think, oh, that's enough.
Taper off and then...
It's not enough. Depending on what you're... Don't get me wrong, everyone's objectives are different. But if you want to get the time you deserve, you need to put the work in. So... And if you're going to run 20, you might as well run 26. So anyway, the point is, I set myself up so that I knew that in the last 10K of every run, I would run my hardest. Mm-hmm. So literally, it's called a progression run. So I might start dead relaxed, 8-minute miles, and then I just crank it up and crank it up and crank it up and crank it up until I get to, say, let's say it was a 24-mile run, and I'd run as hard as I could at race pace for that last 10K. Wow. So what that does do is it sort of training your body that when you should be your most fatigued, you can pull it out and you push on from there. The only problem is obviously in the race, you've obviously run the 18 miles before that quite hard, obviously.
Right, yeah.
So it's a bit different race day, but that preparation, that gets it in your muscle memory. On race day itself, and I found this with city marathons, so where there's a lot of high rises. So it happened to me in Tokyo, and it's really off-putting. So I will use my watch, right? So when I'm doing the podium runs, I will watch my watch, and I will sort of have a target time, and I'll know I want to get to, say, 5:40s in my last sort of 10K.
Yeah. Wow, that's fast. And, so is that,
man? And I get out to Tokyo, and my GPS isn't working.
Right, you, yeah.
So, and not only that, all the markers are in kilometres.
Oh,
I can't
right.
do the arithmetic. I'm running minute miles, and this ain't working. And it's telling me I'm running 5:20s, but you know that's a misread. So this is telling me I'm going much faster than what I am, but I can feel that I'm not, if that makes sense.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Back up, but explain that again. So
yeah, so basically, because
it's the feeling, I think what you're trying to say, or what you are saying there, not trying to say, is it's the...
Something's telling you that you're faster than you are. You can feel it.
You can feel... You're training your body, and whilst you're training your body on the track, you know exactly what times you're running because it's so consistently there on your wrist.
Yep. Mm.
So you can feel that, and you can feel how you feel in your legs, in your heart, and everything, in your whole body. So when you get out to somewhere where you're like, oh, man, my GPS isn't working, it's telling me this, it's telling me that.
So it's,
you know what, F that, I'm just going to just... Exactly. I know exactly right, how my so body... It's your autonomous.
Your watch was throwing you.
My watch was telling me I was going much faster than what I was, but I knew from instinct it was a misread.
Right, I get you now.
And in the end, it was that far off that my watch said I'd ran 27.5 miles or something. And it also gave me a PB marathon time of like 2:20, which was obviously brilliant.
I'm taking that home.
Brilliant, look at this. Brilliant for Strava, like.
Yeah, is that what you uploaded? Yeah, you have to, wouldn't you?
but you can't, yeah. So like, and that's another thing about preparation in that it stops you getting in a flap.
Yeah.
Because I did know, so that whilst they're all in kilometres, I did know there'd be at 5 and 10 miles and 50 miles and 20 miles, it would give me the read.
Yeah.
And what you just have to do is stay calm with it. It's fine. It's actually quite nice, and there's actually a freedom just running off feel.
Yeah. You're feeling it now, aren't you?
And you kind of get in a group which is going at a similar rate that you're going, and to an extent you can switch off.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what you want to find is you just want to find your natural rhythm and your natural pace, and let that take care of itself and relax into it. You don't want to be a wreck when you're running like so tense and uptight.
Yeah. Because
there's an expense cost to that nervous energy.
Yeah, yeah. You're burning calories there in a certain sense of like, ooh, you know, I can imagine. I know, I understand what you're saying there.
So I knew where I needed to be at key points in the race. And then what I would do is like when I got to 5, 10, 15, is I would reset my watch because you've got a lap counter on your watch. So at least you can start it back from that mile, and every so often it would kick back in again, and then it would give me a read, but only for that mile, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can kind of recalibrate.
So you've got an idea.
So then you'd know that between 5 and 10 and between 10 and 15, it should be whatever. But yeah, it does throw you off a bit, but like I say, I think you can get used to that. There was a third point, but I've forgotten it. But anyway,
so how did you go from cycling to running then? What was the transition there?
Yeah, good time.
time.
Okay, yeah. You wanted the more bang for your buck in a sense.
Yeah, I think time's the key. You know, like Ruby came along in 2010.
Was that? Sorry for a really personal question, but was that planned? Yeah, and that was like, yeah.
We kind of knew like we wanted to have our first child when we were 30. So Ruby was planned, and at that point you can't. I mean, you're doing this now. You can't just go and bugger off for seven, 8 hours in a day.
Yeah.
So time efficiency was a big factor, and I also and also fell a bit out of love with it. I did La Marmotte, which was another cycling event in France, and that was out in the Alps. This thing was unreal, like it's...
Altitude-wise.
Yeah, I mean, you start at the foot of Alpe d'Huez, and you do the Col de Glandon, you do the Col de Telegraph, you do the Galibier, and then finally you finish on the Alp. So it's 100 miles and 5,000 metres of climbing.
Apparently, John, Jesus.
It's the hardest cyclosportive in Europe, apparently.
That's ridiculous.
How did you find your breathing at altitude? And how did you train for that?
Like camp base one at Everest, is that just unbelievable?
You can't train for that. I think that was when going back to what I sort of mentioned before. I remember that was when I attempted to do the Fred Witten in preparation for that. And the Fred Witten's like 120 miles in the lakes and 30 odd climbs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I jibbed on that. I got to 65 miles in and I threw my bike.
Out of breath, in pain.
I just knew I couldn't complete it. You have certain checkpoints that you could do, and I was scraping it. And
oh right, they don't let you continue if you're not hitting the time.
Yeah, I wasn't very well prepared. I could have turned up and started 2 hours before I did. I didn't.
So you started like at the back end of it anyway.
So I was already probably going to be on the limiter in terms of times, and it was one of them days where it's warm and then it's cold and then it's raining and it's warm and it's cold. And I got sick of taking my kit off and on, off and on. Yeah. And in the end, and it still haunts that one thing that I've only ever quit at, and it still haunts me today.
I don't think you need to be that bothered about it, man. Honestly,
honestly, it's still ingrained, that feeling of, I don't know whether it's letting myself down or what, I don't know, but
it's incompleting a task, isn't it? It's a mental thing. If you don't complete a task, it always stays incomplete, and that bothers you.
It does bother me.
I think that's how you got to where you got to. Though.
Yeah, yeah. That's part of why you're so good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the people that don't do that, pardon if I offend anyone, is the bonds that end up sat on the couch, quite overweight and doing nothing with their life. You know what I mean? The people that are obsessive over certain things, certain parts and aspects of their life, are the ones that actually progress with their life because they have discipline in that area and they don't want to see any weakness. And if there's weakness there, well, then you're the only person that can beat yourself up, because we're all individual humans, aren't we? You know, where you're all on your own path. Your daughter's on her own path. You know what I mean? You're a dad, but she will eventually fly the nest and do her own thing. You know, but it's like you're the only one that beat yourself up, and so you being your own governor in a sense is where's got you to where you want to be. You know what I mean?
And I think that I talked to Luke about this because he's got similar psychology, which is those moments of failure. And if you don't fail, you're not trying hard enough, right? Mm-hmm. To me, that was a catastrophic failure, because I let myself, I quit. There's a difference between trying to achieve something and trying your very hardest and you fall short, right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing, and that's one level of failure. But quitting is unacceptable. Yeah. And I think that that failure living with me, grinding on me, then to talk about the training when I went out there, is that that thing's in my brain. I've got to seek retribution for that. do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
so how did you feel doing it?
It was so hard. I mean, the elevation differences are massive. So like on the floor, it was like 30 degrees at sea level. And as you're climbing and you're climbing and you're climbing and you're climbing, you're getting colder and you're getting colder and you're getting colder and colder.
It changes. Yeah.
Apparently it changes like 1 degree for every, few hundred foot or something like that. Right, so by the time you get to, these things are nothing like we have, like 3 pendulils or something like in terms of height. Yeah. They're just crazy.
Yeah.
But I suppose as you're climbing, you're still keeping yourself quite warm, but then it's on the descent, and these descents are like nothing else again. So the descents are hard work. The climbs are a grind. They're like 15 to 25 kilometers long, switchback, but they're not particularly steep.
Grind, it's like a steady incline going all the way up. It's not like this.
Which is the difference with the lakes. Lakes are straight up.
Yeah.
These are just grinds for many hours. Like, Alpe d'Huez took me 2.5 hours to climb right at the back end of an 80-mile bike ride. But you didn't want to stop, right? You were literally shitting yourself that if I stop here, I'm pushing. Because you ain't getting started again.
Yeah, you can't start back. Yeah.
And every person that stopped on that hill reinforces that mentality. I don't want to be that guy.
I'm not getting off this bike.
I ain't getting off. Even if I'm grinding at 2 miles an hour, I am grinding to the top of this thing. but the downhills, strange things happen. Like your forearms, your shoulders, your upper body is actually killing you because you lent forward downhill all the time. And I'll be honest with you, you're scared rigid because you're going 40 odd mile an hour.
Man,
I think
if you come off there,
you break. You're just on brakes constantly. Geez,
and then you've got the French and Italian cyclists just bombing down either side of you, literally whistling past you. One mistake where you turn a bit to the right, you're going to have a wipeout.
Oh,
And
so sort of speed you going down there then?
You're going easy 40 a mile an hour.
Oh my god!
Because these descents are not like normal descents. They're 10 miles long.
Yeah, yeah.
And at good gradients.
Wow.
So whilst the speed's a great adrenaline rush, your arms are killing you. Your brakes start to fade eventually. They stop working.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've just got to pray you get to the bottom.
Foot on the back tyre, trying to slow yourself down.
And also with the bike, and I had a couple of accidents as well, and which put me right off. So I had a couple of bad falls where I smashed my arm up and ended up, a car hit me. I've been hit by two cars.
Oh, wow.
Commuting into Manchester. And those kind of things just put me off, really.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine.
I lost my edge, to be honest. I was a bit scared.
Yeah, I suppose that. There you go. You lose your edge in anything, really. Yeah. Then you time to stop, isn't it?
The amount of cyclists that do die on roads, British roads, it's scary, especially like. A lot of the time it's sort of middle-aged men start getting into the sport and they've not done any training and then they go and do these really long rides and have like cardiac events and stuff. It's like it's really common.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, well you see the stereotypical mammal, don't you?
Got
a big old beer gut.
Cheeks
hanging off on each side of the saddle and it's an accident waiting to happen and I don't think people... It's like anything. I've fallen off a motorbike as well. Until you fall off, you don't really appreciate like how close to the knife edge you are.
You're right there.
It hurts.
It really hurts.
And obviously, in your day job, you must see these things. People just. I got a newfound appreciation for how much it hurts falling off a bike and how unprotected you are from that. So yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy, man. You are obviously a machine. So you went into running. What was your first race then, or was it just like park runs for a little while? Or
so, I fell out of love with it all, I think, and I went through a period from memory where I got lazy, and I think I'm trying to think why I can't remember why I ended up getting lazy with it all, but. So a colleague, it's funny how you draw inspiration from different people. So a colleague joined me in another company I worked at and called Rob. And he was, he'd just done two Ironmans.
Okay. Back to back. I was going to ask when these started.
It kind of lit a fire back in me. And I thought, hang on a minute. I wanted to then go revisit it. I think I probably had about a year off where I might have been niggled with injuries for whatever reasons. Yeah. I wasn't doing it. And then I met Rob, and he was inspiring himself with his story, because what inspired me more was the reason why he was doing what he was doing. And I believe it was something to do with his brother had an accident, and he'd lost his arm or arms or something like that.
He was
doing the Ironman as well.
And that's why
Rob was doing it. And I kind of and he lit a fire up in me, and he encouraged me and whatever to get back into it. And then I think that year I did the Manchester Marathon, which I think was probably 2016, something like that.
Was this in preparation for the Ironman? You started preparing
He sowed a seed, right?
Yeah.
But at that point, I hadn't really acknowledged that seed. I think I did the half Ironman the year after that, which is what would that be? 56 miles bike, about a 1.2 mile swim and then a half marathon. Then we went through a bit of a so my wife in between that, she ended up getting Hodgkin's lymphoma, cancer. She's fine now.
That's amazing.
We went, I mean, especially her, obviously, went to some dark places.
Damn straight.
And after she got better.
Amazing she survived Hodgkin's lymphoma, man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
What an inspiration. A fighter, you know, like, if you think... you're hard, then you know what I mean, like stuff that you do and you think or whatever, that's nothing. Surviving that treatment is...
You're a healthy man, and you sometimes when you're out, see, this is an answer to many questions that we could ask you today, isn't it? How do you get yourself around an Ironman? Oh, my wife, like, she you know, she survived Hodgkin's lymphoma, like, I don't need to answer any more questions, you know what I mean? I'm nothing compared to that, you know.
I mean, just just to go through chemotherapy and seeing where she was and still keep on battling on and still keep on taking Ruby to school and still, you know, doing what she needed to do was just incredible. The positive news from that, obviously, you know, she's better now, 3 years in remission.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something which sort of gave back, because the Rosendale Hospice, where she got a lot of psychological help, meeting groups, she got massages and various things through that outlet. And we could talk about it as much as you want, but it's very hard for me to relate. I think until you speak to people who are in the same situation as or have been through that, I think that's really important. So I then decided to latch on and do the Ironman. And that was 2017. So I did the UK Ironman. And I did it to raise money.
Charitable.
That was my main motivation.
To give back.
Give me something to put behind it. And I was very proud of what I raised what we raised. You know, we're a team in the day. My wife and I. And it was worth putting myself through all of that training. I don't think I ever want to revisit that, because it was single handedly like tough.
Like one of the other things. Would you say
what is it again? A full Ironman?
Yeah. So you've got 2.5 miles in at Pennington Flash, so open water swimming. You've then got 100 and let me get this right. I think it's 112 miles on bike, and with not insignificant climbing, and then you've got a marathon at the end of it. So it's like,
You're a strong swimmer.
Wasn't to start off with.
Right, you had to work
it. Took me 9 months of prep to get my swimming to where I wanted it to be.
Okay.
It's interesting because you look at the different disciplines there, and the difference between a great swimmer and me, mediocre swimmer, isn't a huge delta. So you might find that a really good swimmer can do that in an hour, for argument's sake. Whereas I might do it in an hour 15. So you've got to look at, this is the thing, you've got to look at where to focus your energy.
Mm-hmm. Your strength is running.
Yeah, see, exactly.
And cycling, so
So it gets to a point where you're not going to get much of a gain from that. Mm-hmm. The one thing I had when I was talking about the swim was when I did the half Ironman, I didn't do any open water practice.
How was the difference? Just the reason that this is really good for me and Lee is because one of the things we mentioned at the beginning of this year is we were going to try and do a first open water swim this year at some point. And I was just thinking, I would be all right training the pool, just get in there and do it. What would you say?
That's a mistake. So that's exactly what I did. I thought, well, how far is it? A mile? So what's that? I don't know. I'm just going to guess, but I'm going to guess about 60 lengths, probably.
I'm
probably not far off.
As
long as I can crank that out, no bother. It's an entirely different. I was quite confident. I can knock this out, no problem. I jumped in and then I had an absolute flap.
Freezing cold straight away.
I flapped big time. I thought I was going to have to tap out, literally. I was looking for the nearest canoe. In there, I cut corners and I got a cheap wetsuit off
from eBay. Not being able to breathe.
My breath away. I'd got this cheap wetsuit, and the more money you spend on a wetsuit, as I've found out now, is that the more flexibility you get in like your shoulders
to allow you
to swim. Mm. I bought a cheap ass wetsuit, which is probably all right for surfing, but not for swimming really. And I couldn't move my I couldn't get my front crawl going.
Couldn't fully rotate to front crawl.
I was finding it exhausting to just get going. And then I thought, oh God, I can't believe this. I'm like 3 minutes in, and I've
your governor's
already. And anyway, so I grabbed onto the canoe, and I thought, right, just take a moment,
just paddle, boys, paddle.
See, I'm bloody idiot, me. I've put myself near, because you're positioning yourself, right?
Yeah.
I get up there, Billy Big Spuds. I'm fine. I can knock 60.
You're at the front,
and I'm near the front, aren't I? Yeah. And I'm paddling around doing breaststroke, doggy paddle, holding onto the canoe, I'm trying to get my wetsuit right and whatever, and then I thought, right, just calm down, just get moving. So I'm just doing a bit of breaststroke, like I'm on a leisurely swim,
armbands
like
on
Doris down the pool,
armbands and snorkeling tow.
Like, But it's funny, you know, as soon as I got to a calm place and I couldn't even tell you what the switch was, I suddenly started putting one arm over the other and one arm over the other. Yeah. And I managed to get myself some forward momentum. I came out, I had a terrible swim and I came out of the pool, out of the water, like miles back from where I should have been.
Yeah.
But I got out and I was just so relieved. I thought,
I did it.
That's done.
From the start of crawling out doing this.
I'm not likely to die on a bike or a run, but it could happen out there. I'll be honest with you. So, you're getting a flap in the water. So what I did the year afterwards when I did the full Ironman, I was lucky enough to work round the corner from Pennington Flash where the actual swim was. And from early April, when it's frigid cold, I bought a new wetsuit. That was the first thing I knew I needed to do. I trained in the pool all before that for a good few months before that.
Yeah.
And then I got straight into Penny Flash and did an hour or 2 hours at a time and just built that swimming up. And it's made like the kit helps. So you end up getting big ass gloves to keep your hands warm.
I'm going to say, I think that's the biggest thing, what you said. I think because there's a lot of talk about cold exposure nowadays, isn't there? Especially for recovery and all this kind of stuff. And there is a certain amount of, like Wim Hof talks about, the breathing side of things, making sure you're taking, you're doing a lot of, there's 10 seconds in or something like that, not fully breathing back out before you breathing back in. Do 20 cycles of that. If you're not too lightheaded, then you can step into a cold shower, or you can jump into something, or you can expose yourself to extreme cold. And it controls yourself because it fills your body full of oxygen. But I can imagine as soon as you said that then, as soon as you were like, right, okay, let's do this, let's go. Oh, my God, oh, my... And it does, it take the shock and it takes your breath away, doesn't it, man?
It does. And again, setting yourself up for not doing the open water is setting yourself up for failure, but doing the exact route you're going to do. So, again, it becomes automatic and you don't flap when you get in. Yeah. It's like super important. And it just takes a bit to get used to put your face fully in that cold water in April when it's like, I don't know, what would it be, about 9 degrees, the temperature in the water.
Wow.
But that practice. So every Monday I went down there, like I said, just built it up an hour through to being able to do...
I'm going
to
say, so how long... Sorry to interrupt you again, man, but when you first start, like how long, what did you first start with open water swimming? Was it like, I'm going to go down, I'm going to do like half a mile, or I'm going to do a mile?
Exactly. The mark out buoys, because it's all properly organised and you've got people out there on a boat, if anyone has an episode, but you kind of know that how many loops, like you'd know one loop is half a mile or whatever, and you think, well, if I do nothing else, I'm just going to do one loop.
Yeah.
I'll see how I feel. If it's too cold or whatever, I can always get out. And the worst thing is, obviously, when you get out, you're not too bad. Once you're moving and you kind of dive in and you do a couple of things. One is you let as much water into your wetsuit as you can.
Okay.
Because that keeps you warm.
Yeah, because that keeps you warm. And then your next thing you probably do is pee in it. And that keeps you warm as well, which is quite nice. I tell you, it's an amazing feeling, you know. You're like,
I can imagine.
So nice and comfy. And then it sounds disgusting, that, but it is what it is.
So then
you get yourself moving, and then you get your body temperature issues kind of gone away until you get out. Then when you get out, you're like shaking, like you would not believe. Yeah. Trying to take your wetsuit off when you're flaming cold
is
really, really hard work.
Because Goggins talks about that, some of the SEAL training that they used to do when they get them like to the point where they're absolutely freezing, you know what I mean? To the point where they cannot use their hands and then get them to do things with their hands.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Dexterity training
and stuff like that. Mm. You know, like I'm a big fan of Ross Edgley as well, the guy that swam around Great Britain, and he talks about that a lot. And how did you deal with a sense? Because I've seen a lot of things, and he's talked a lot about the calories in and calories out. Because calories are a good way of keeping your thermogenic energy going and keeping you warm as well. You know, if you're down on calories and you get out, I definitely feel the cold more. If I'm not, I always try to eat a certain amount. But if you don't, you feel a massive difference. So in that sense, I haven't touched on nutrition yet, but in the sense of like when you started taking on something like that, was that like
refueling an Ironman is going to have to be part of the process?
It was interesting. I did an experiment at the time. So I read a book called Primal Endurance.
Yeah,
and it's about ultra running and ultra events, and it majored on diet, and a lot of what it majored on was the paleo diet.
Okay.
Which, you know, in essence is eating just really clean.
Yeah.
No processed foods.
Yeah.
No hydrogenated fats, if that's the right word. So no processed oils.
Yeah.
No processed sugars or and I changed it. I flipped my diet 2 months before Ironman. I thought, well, I'll go at this. It's a big risk, this actually.
Yeah.
Probably not to be recommended because it could go one way or the other. And I found that eating natural food really, really helped. So on when I did the Ironman, I can honestly say that I only took one gel and that was it. And,
okay.
And that was on the marathon at like probably 20 odd miles. And to be honest, I'd have ate just whatever you'd have put in my hands, I would have just ate it. But all the way through the bike, et cetera, I just ate natural products.
What did you take then?
So
I take it you do the swim, and where your bike rack is you've got your supply for the rest of it, haven't you?
Yeah, you've loaded up your bike. You've got all your nutrition on your bike.
Right.
What are you going to take? So you have your bike. There's a lot of bananas and stuff dotted around the course. And,
yeah.
Make sure that, yeah.
But it's a bit of a risk that if you've not trained with that stuff and then you start eating it. Bananas are fine, obviously, because you're going to eat bananas, but... some of the gels and all that sort of stuff, I wouldn't entertain it because things can go wrong. So what I found worked for me was coconut balls. They're fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So we made some of those from scratch. What else did I have? Some apricots, nuts.
Yeah.
I ate a full bag of dates.
Yeah.
Not a good plan.
they're full of iron though, aren't they?
They're good in some way. They're good. They're phenomenal for energy and calories. But my transition between bike and run was a lot more lengthy than what I'd have planned, if I'm honest.
Straight
and
through.
It involved a few stops on the run as well. So I was kind of like, that
trial and error thing.
A few too many.
But literally, like, because the principle of it is about flipping your diet and your training in that you bias fats over carbs.
Yeah.
And the principle being there that in a dead simple way of doing it, it's a massive topic, this, isn't it?
But
I
remember just things in the simple way in that in your carbs or in your glycogen stores, you've got 90 minutes of energy.
Yes, before you're having to replenish it.
And then you're going to bonk.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're not primarily and 100% just drawing from carbs.
No, you are.
But let's be honest, if you're a carb-fueled athlete, so it's your pastas, it's your rices, it's all that sort of stuff, then you're probably going to be, I don't know, burning 70% carbs and maybe 30% fats.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, it's going to run out, and you've got a challenge then to keep on topping it up.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand is literally with fats, you've just got an infinite supply of energy.
Yeah.
So literally, we can survive on fats for days and days and days and days if you can draw on it. So there's two things. One is don't keep your carbohydrate level low. So maybe 30% of your dietary intake being carbohydrate. That's borderline keto, to be fair.
And you were
going to say it sounds like the keto thing that's existent.
I've experimented with keto diet as well, and that can work quite well in different ways. But just to follow on from the paleo thing, let's say 30-40%.
Yeah.
And then mainly because it's a big meat thing, so proteins are quite high and then your fats are quite high.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of coconut oil and things like that. But what's important with it as well is you need to change your training methods as well. And you need to really focus on working in your aerobic zone.
Okay.
And only then will you adapt your body to be able to...
to be fat adaptive.
To be fat adaptive.
Yeah.
And it can happen. It probably takes about 2 or 3 months, but I found that I'd become fat adapted. I wouldn't say I was anywhere. I wouldn't say I was ready to bonk at all. I think that whilst, don't get me wrong, I was cramping and muscle fatigue and all that sort of stuff. I found that that being fat adapted was a massive help for that endurance activity. And I was so disciplined with it. I wish I could say I was as disciplined right now as what I was then, but literally I went full on, you know, like for the Ironman. Because I've read this thing and it convinced me it's got to be worth a go. So you can just keep on burning fats. And you're not really hungry. You're like, when you're cycling, you kind of get in a habit of just eating, 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 eating as you're going along. you don't really need it if you're burning fat. As long as you're keeping your heart rate, say, below, I don't know, 140, something like that.
Yeah.
You should be able to just keep on going and going. I mean, everyone's 140 is different, by the way. Depends
yeah,
on,
for
obviously,
sure, yeah.
age and fitness
it's
level.
It's easier on, isn't it, with stuff like that, yeah.
So that was a real positive. And I love the paleo bars. They're great. You can get them from Aldi.
From Aldi, yeah. I had two of them yesterday on the way around Three Peaks. But yeah, that's the idea of stuff. It was very risky, though, like you said, though, changing that up 2 weeks before doing that event.
Two months, should I say.
In a sense, because it's like the idea of your body being so used to, say if you did eat quite a lot of carbs anyway, but then you reduce them straight down and adapting yourself to that. But would you say that now, if you are like you've got the Three Peaks coming up, you just did the recce of it yesterday.
So
that's coming up on the 27th of April, is it? How would you enter that one? Because that obviously that's not an Ironman, but that's a marathon, and it's a fucking tough one. You know what I mean? It's in a sense, it's a marathon length, but it's not flat by any stretch.
No, it's not. So what I tried this time around with Tokyo, and what I'd repeat, because I think it worked really, really well, is on the Sunday before I went out, I ran a really hard flat out 10K. So I competed in the Stanley Park.
What splits like?
Like, so I ran 33:33. So it was a PB. I don't know what that is. Is it 5:30s or something like that? Anyway,
that's ridiculous. Sorry.
So the point was, I wanted to. You might think, well, this guy's bonkers. Why would he run like as hard as he can a week before a marathon? You know, what's the cost of doing that? And I also ran a half marathon the week before as hard as I could. But there was a strategy behind it in that you want to deplete your carbohydrates as much as possible. Okay. And then what I did is I flipped my diet then to be high protein. Very high protein for 4 days.
Okay.
And little carbs.
Yeah. Because protein fills you up, so you don't need the carbs, is the idea.
But also, it's helping, you know, you've savaged your body for 4 months, and the protein is helping the healing process.
As your cells and everything.
But also, the whole point of doing that is your carbs low, and then when you flip the switch, and then you move into carbohydrates, your body absorbs even more.
Yeah, right,
So actually, your glycogen levels end up getting even more full. So,
Fascinating.
And Tokyo is one of the best places to do that because it's just white rice everywhere, you know, and soba noodles and all that stuff, which is pretty healthy stuff. So at the moment now, what I would say is I've got a balance in that I try not to eat processed crap. Although this weekend I've been terrible.
It sneaks in, doesn't it? Yeah.
God, this weekend, what did I have? I did the Fell race, Lancs Champs Fell race on Saturday. As soon as I finished that, I had a KFC. I'm starving.
The Colonel's calling.
I've got like, I love fried chicken. and then on Sunday, what did I have? We had a massive Chinese yesterday afternoon in Three Peaks. And then before that, because I literally had half an hour between getting back from the Peaks and getting to the show, which my daughter was doing.
Yeah, you
I ended up going to Banny's Fish and Chip Shop.
I think
those might have had fish, chips and peas on Friday night as well. So you can cheat it, but at the end of the day, like, I dread to think what my calorie burn is at the minute. And I'm running double days, 86 miles. And not only that, I'm doing conditioning work every single day.
Dude, whatever you're putting in doesn't touch the sides. I see it as like it's like a whirring engine, like what are them balls that got?
The power balls.
And you set that going, and it's. And I see like the thermogenic engine as that, you know, and your metabolism starts raging and racing once you start stoking that fire. I think with someone like yourself, it's always burning. So whatever fuel you're putting in, it's just burning straight away at high, you know, you're constantly putting like you did you did two things this weekend, didn't you? Two marathons in a sense. Did you say on a Saturday in there?
Yeah, so the Lancs Champs Fell race was at Pendle. Wasn't particularly long one. That was
four
and a half miles.
Right, okay, yeah.
And 1500 foot.
So
it was in terms of elevation per mile, it was quite big. My legs going to the Peaks on Sunday were already destroyed, really, from doing that.
This is the funniest thing that happened this week, right? So Lee's going, I'm doing the Three Peaks, I'm walking the Three Peaks on Sunday. And I'm like, oh, good luck, man. You know, that's going to be challenging. Yeah. You'll do it. You'll be fine. He's like, John's coming on Monday. and he's running it on Sunday. And I was just like, I just took your man point straight away then, didn't it?
I tell you what, for a walk though, you go around 6.5 hours.
Dude, it's a tough... No, 7.5 hours.
Oh, 7.5 hours. So we ran around in 4.5.
What? That's
and,
crazy.
We were really... To be fair, we both weren't feeling it. Dave, who I went around with.
It's a hard gig, is that? Honestly. Yeah. I mean, we were... honestly, man, you want to do it?
Like, oh,
honestly.
No, I'm laughing at you. Honestly, I'm laughing at you, but I'm exactly the same boat. I don't even think I could walk it in 7.5 hours.
To walk it, because we did it the first time, we did it in 9 hours 15, I was way less fitter than I am now and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, I was going to go with my mate. You know, he's done it quite a few times. And we just literally took a leisurely stroll around, stopped a few times to take in the scenery. I had a beautiful roof on top of Wernside, unlike yesterday. Apart from Penygain at the end. And at the end, I just wanted it to be the end. But we pushed straight on. But we did it the arse-end way around yesterday. We started and we went from Horton straight up onto Inglebury in 1 hour and 15. And then down the steep side, right across down to that pub, and then straight up to Wernside, up the steep side of Wernside. I got to the top of Wernside, my calves were cramping because we were pushing it.
Yeah, yeah.
We were trying to get as fast as we could. By the time we got to the top of Wernside from setting off from Horton, it were like we just got up to 3 hours. So we were like, right. And then we stopped for a bit, took a few pictures of the thing, and then we were like, right, let's go straight away. So I got some jelly babies. I'm eating some jelly babies. And then we started running down the... Just letting momentum take us down the big, long paving stones.
Yep.
But obviously, you came up the steep side straight up through the middle. And we were just letting momentum bring us all the way down. Got down to the Ribblehead Viaduct. And then we were just like, right, we'll stop for a minute. Stopped for literally 5 minutes. I only had time to take my boots off, wiggle my toes about, put my boots back on again, and then just like take a drink of coffee. I put some like double cream in it as well. I'm just trying to get as much in as possible, and then set off walking again. But the pace we're walking at was quite fast because we weren't doing it for views or anything like that. We were just literally trying to get as fast as we could.
Timed walk,
and do you know what's pretty funny? Really quickly, is in the back of my head. One of my customers I was tattooing. I was looking at him. He won't listen to this. I don't think he will. But I was looking at him. And he was talking to me about it one day. This is about 4 or 5 weeks ago. He's like, oh yeah, we did Three Peaks, yeah. He's did it just under 7 hours, man. Yeah, and I'm looking at him like, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh really? Did you? No way, man. That's incredible, man. That's unbelievable. No way. Fucking hell. Wow. Okay. No worries. Anyway, so yesterday I'm like pushing as hard as I can push.
You've got this 7 hour thing in your head.
Yeah. So I've got this in my head. He's planted this scene in my head of like. The seed in my head of like, right, I've got to get there. So I'm pushing and I'm pushing and I'm pushing. And I realized that we were making a fast time anyway, but just walking it. So I'm pushing, I'm pushing, I'm pushing, I'm pushing it. And we were coming towards, as we were getting towards Penygain, I am fighting my governor to just be like, right, we need to stop and just have a rest now. Because I just, but the thing is, nothing good's going to come from stopping at that point.
No.
You have to keep moving. So I was just like, right, keep moving. But Daz, the guy who I were walking with, is a good walker, he's a seasoned walker. So he's walking at a fast pace. And I'm just keeping up with him, keeping up with him, keeping up with him. By the time we got to Penygain, we were getting up Penygain. I'm like, because we didn't go up the steep side of Penygain, we didn't go up the scrambling bit first. We were coming right round. As we were coming around there, I was seriously like, man, I have had enough at this point. I'm going to finish, but I definitely need to stop. And Darren's just like, come on, we're nearly there. We're top of here, up there, round there, and we're done. And he's like, get up round there, get down there, and I reckon it'll be just over 7 hours, 7 hours, 20 minutes. I'm like, in the back of my head, I'm like, motherfucker, I've not beat Liam's time. You know, in my head. So I'm just like, man, no way. How's Liam done this? So I'm pushing, I'm pushing, I'm pushing. Anyway, long and short of it is, I get back home last night, pretty proud of my 7.5 hours. And I'm sat there, and Liam commented on it. He's like, "Dude, you've got a little bit more to go till you beat my time. But well done, man. You should try the National Three Peaks." And I'm like, "Man, yeah." So I scroll through his pages, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, "Wow, he did it in 6.5 hours. Hold on, 21 miles. I did 26 miles, and he did 21 miles. I'm like, you didn't even do it properly. You know what I mean? There must be something that's gone wrong there with his thingy, but he's logged it at that time, 6.5 hours, for 21 miles. We did 26 miles at 7.5 hours. And I'm like, I honestly, proper played with my head when I were out there, and I overthought it. When I've got back, I'm like,
I did beat you, man. You got the man points there.
Yeah. I don't think you did.
But it's funny you mentioned that because there's another lad at Barlick Fell Runners who I run for called Tim, and he'd gone out the day before.
Right.
He had a beautiful day. Saturday was stunning.
Stunning day.
I saw his photos, whatever. He was bathing in the stream and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I clocked, he'd done 4 hours 30, and there was no way I was not finishing that under 4 hours 30.
Yeah.
So David and I were talking about, we were talking about it all the way to the back end. We just got to beat 4:30. Let's just get, it doesn't matter.
It just plays you.
You don't, there's no prizes for winning the recce. It doesn't really matter, to be quite honest, but yeah. We were talking about it.
It just plants seeds in your head though, doesn't it? Little bits and bats and stuff like that. It is what it is. But even that, you know, like we've massively segued off here, but I like the idea of this. It's when we were when I saw that you were doing that, it put me on to like, well, I went to look at the race results from last year, which obviously you probably looked at, and it was
a few
like
times.
And it's like, man, I think the guy who finished it did it in 2 hours 49 minutes.
What?
Last year did the... I think
I don't understand
that,
how anybody can run
rightly.
One of them, never
Tom
mind
Corrigan
all of it.
Who runs, he yeah, got, I think he was fifth or sixth or something like that.
I think he did it in like, what is it, 3:11, something like that.
3 hours 11, yeah. Dude, when you do that, you'll just be like, I don't even know. You have to be, what pace would you be sitting there? You have to be pretty much... at full pace getting around there.
It's ludicrous. You're going to like 6:50s at least to do a 3 hour odd. I kind of, until I'd done the recce yesterday, and this is why why preparation is so important. You know, Goggins talks about it, doesn't he? Whenever he's going to go out and do an ultra, he'll make sure he at least drives the course, if not runs part of the course to make sure he's mentally prepared. And it reminds me to do the same. So like yesterday, there's a few tests really. One is you just want to know where you are, where you should push, where your strengths are going to be, where your weaknesses are going to be. Test your nutrition strategy.
Yeah.
Test your hydration strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And just get a feel for the what you're going to put your body through. But I came out of that yesterday thinking like, this is going to be tough, because I've set in my mind there's different rankings, right?
Yeah.
And there's an elite ranking, which
yes,
is anyone
is,
who
yeah.
does anything under, I think it's 315.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of set in my head that I'd like to do 315 or under and get this elite thing. And like, as I was going around yesterday thinking, bloody hell.
Wow.
How do people get around this in 3 hours? That record, I think there's a very, very good chance that will go this year. I think you've got a local lad, Chris Holdsworth, who's going to be... He's going to be on fire. I mean, like, he did the Pendle Fell race I did.
He's all over Strava. Saturday. He's number one everywhere. Yeah. I'm just like,
he's from around here, is it?
That name's popular name, yeah.
Yeah, so he put 2 minutes into the nearest athlete. So bear in mind, he's not getting pushed on the Fell race he did on Saturday. And over 5.5 minutes into me, over 4.5 miles. This guy's phenomenal.
Now,
I don't know the name of the person, but there's another person who's probably equally as good as him. So you can only imagine the performance that's going to get out of the pair of them. And I think the record's 2:45. So watch this space. I think it's going to go.
Wow, okay.
But it's interesting because apparently it's... the folklore is obviously this has changed over time, because obviously with the erosion up there and stuff, the more and more they've changed and put slabs and paths and whatever in some respects, like when you go from Penygent to Wernside, that's a much easier run than what it was historically when that record had been set.
You're right,
all felt like literally you'd have been
bogs
in the mud
and everything
moors,
Darren
whatever.
Was talking about yesterday
but it's literally like a really nice gravel path now, and that's kind of when I was thinking yesterday. So we went up to, we did Penygent, and it was first, and it was horrid.
Right, yeah.
It was freezing at the top. We didn't even stop at the trig for a picture.
No, it's
we
just like, man, go.
Get down, gone. and the path is pretty decent, to be fair. That one's probably the best one a lot, really.
Yes,
For ease of getting up. So we get up that one, and we bomb back down again, and then you've got that 6 or 7 mile drag, haven't you?
It's like seven or eight.
And kind of I'm thinking in my mind that... I ain't going to beat a fell runner at a fell runner's game It just isn't going to happen. So
you're going to make your time up on these bits. Is that what you're saying?
The in-between bits.
Yeah.
So that's where I've got to think to myself, right, I've got to get the hammer down.
You've got to be careful to not bonk as well by the time you get to Wernside.
Well, this is the thing. And we got to Wernside. And
you don't want to be cramping by then.
I actually felt off. About 40 miles in or something. Yeah. And I'm actually thinking, like, this is, I didn't feel so bad. Going up that drag at Wernside, literally about halfway up, I got to the third false summit of it all. We cannot see anything in front of us.
You're walking up, you're running up into clout. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Literally, my shins are killing me at this point because literally my feet are bent as far back as they possibly can be. my Achilles is killing me.
Yeah.
Have you done Wernside?
No.
Oh, man, the part that he's saying he's run up, when you are stood at the top looking down at it, you're like, what?
Because Leanne said you want to go down it.
You would not want to go down it.
You would not want to go down it, that's for sure. So, and we got up there, and Dave was just like, who I went with, he was just kind of guessing where we might hit the trig. So we ended up at one point just double checking, so we didn't end up going off any like massive tangent. So we checked the phone, checked the compass. We seemed to be heading towards the trig, and literally, like, we must have hit it within like 24, which is fantastic. So we got to the trig, but at that point, I was thinking like, oof, this is tough, and then that descent from Wernside as well is horrendous.
I was going to ask you how you even consider, because we went up that first, obviously we went up that first and then came down the long way down, but coming up that, you're like, wow, people come down this at speed.
Yeah, those slabs they've put in there are awful to run on.
Yeah,
so what we were trying to do is find lines off the slabs. So this is where you lose a bit of time as well, because you're wrecking the...
Yeah, they put the new ones. You're talking about the new ones. Yeah,
massive pit. They're horrible to run on.
Yeah.
Because even though it was reasonably dry yesterday, it was still greasy.
Yeah,
slippy as fuck. And you can't get any... because of the size of them, you can't get any running rhythm. And then at some point, it actually gets like really jaggedy, the path. So we're just trying to find routes down the grass that's sensible, where you're not going to go down on your backside. And Smurf, who I went with, he's a phenomenal descender, right? So he'd just bomb off, and then like I'd be there dithering about, trying
not to fall over and break anything.
Yeah. Like, if anything happens, I'm just going to have to go down on my bum like a child.
Yeah.
How's that? Like, it's like a skill to descend off something running, isn't it? It's like a skill in itself.
Ross actually talks about it. He talks about when he went forward running.
Falling
gracefully down. It's literally like...
Do you hold yourself
falling
back
gracefully, just by tiptoeing here, there? You know, I can't remember how Ross Edgley described it, but he, the way he talks of foul running is, you can tell how much he admires it, because it is literally ludicrous, his foul running. They're some of the fittest, most incredible athletes. You know, to be able to just run out there and run the fouls is just unbelievable.
So the downhill, you know, particularly from Ingleborough, so it's fine. You'd think, right, great, I've done the three peaks, happy days, I'm almost job done. And you've probably got, what is it, 4 miles, 4 or 5 miles-ish from the top of Ingleborough.
Down into Horton.
Down into Horton.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, we did it in reverse to what you did. But the that bit is like hell on earth.
Yeah.
It is just rock everywhere. And you're thinking like,
you already
how
saw
are these guys like 6 minute miling down here?
Yeah.
And like, I'm getting a bit of a flap, like not wanting to fall and snap my ankle.
Yeah.
As I'm going along, but a lot of other people just have no fear. But I think that, you know, Smurf in particular, he's a very good level cyclocross. I mean, like, he's sponsored by Hope and stuff like that. He gets custom-built bikes and whatever.
Oh, wow.
And I was kicking his brains.
Downhill cycling,
And if you think about it, when he's running, it's like actually in slow motion. Because if you can pick paths as you're hurtling down on a cyclocross bike and not fall off, when you're running, actually, you've got a lot more time to make decisions.
To actually make those split-second decisions. Yeah.
And he's not really interested in road running. He just off-road runs all the time.
Right, okay.
Whereas I off-road run part-time, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, even in that fell race we did on Saturday, I'm going uphill, I'm fine. I've built a lot of strength in my quads down the gym and what have you, and I was climbing to the kart track, up the kart track, and but going downhill, it must have only been half a mile. The guys who could descend had already put a minute into me by the time they got down to the bottom.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't even that technical a descent. I just think I've got a bit of a mental block that I need to get over, where you just need to be able to let go.
Yeah, it's a big ask. I think honestly, I think just going down in most things, you know, it's like you're talking, it's what we've talked about already, you know, going down a hill on a road bike. Yeah, you're saying like when you...
The fear.
Going, yeah, you could, the fear of it, man. Yeah. Just going at pace on a road bike or even going at pace with your feet, you know, especially when you fell running. Even when you're on concrete and you're going down a big long hill, it fucks your knees. You know what I mean? It really savages your knees. Yeah. Mm. It's horrendous on your body. It's horrendous on your joints. Brass Edgley talks about it's a series of successive jumps. You know what I mean? It's like the idea of you jumping constantly on your joints, constantly, constantly. Fell running's even worse. You're falling at really weird points. You know, one foot can fall there, the other one's... You know, you're constantly falling at really weird angles.
I thought this is just me being... So I thought that fell running were actually better for your joints because it's on softer ground. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I hear like road running can be really, really bad for your joints.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure that. I mean, what is it? What is the right terminology for it? It's concentric on your muscles, right? That's when you stretch out like that. That's concentric, yes. isn't it? Right. So when you stretch your muscles at full stretch, that is where a lot of fatigue comes from and where DOMS come from.
Yes.
And running downhill, you are stretched like that.
When you're
going uphill, actually, you're running quite compact. So you don't kind of get... Don't get wrong, you get a thigh burn and what have you. But with fell running, I suppose, when it's really steep, it's a great equaliser, really, because as long as you're walking, everyone is walking, apart from Holdsworth, who's probably running at 6 minute miles.
So the uphills, you're jogging until you're at a walking pace, basically.
And then you're grinding. And it's funny, sometimes even if you can run it, the person in front of you will be walking, think, oh, it's acceptable to walk. So it's weird, you know, you're like sheep when you see other people. He's walking, so I'll take a bit of a breather. And you go, so that's a great equaliser. But on the downhill, that frigs your legs. Particularly when it's really, really rocky, that's where I found yesterday. It's one thing throwing yourself down a grass bank and hoping for the best because you could end up in a little bit of a mangle, but what's the worst? You trip on some of this stuff down on the three, you're going to make a mess. You're going to be in an ambulance. Smash your head open, whatever. But I think... this is kind of the thing. I think the guys who are good at it, what I'm just saying to you now, what even crossed their mind?
I
might fall over and smash my head. Whereas I don't know why. Yeah. But
I know what you mean.
You get a bit more of that fear the older you get, though, as well, don't you?
That's for sure.
Your life.
I've got to work.
Yeah, because when we came down Ingleborough, just walking down it, we came down the thingy quite quick, but Darren came down really quick, but I was trying to come down as fast as I could down the steep side of Ingleborough. You know the bit where you run right up from the pub, you run on them long flags, and then there's that marshland where you're walking along the wooden track, and then you get off the marshland, more wooden flags, and you get to that steep part, and you're going up that steep part, and then you're onto the top of Ingleborough.
Yeah.
So we came down the steep part. So when you get to that steep part, you're coming down it, and the stones are kind of built. So
one with like 2 or 3 foot like jumps.
So you can walk in onto them. So they're like kind of facing like this. So when you're coming down that bit,
it's back on you.
It's slippy
as hell as well yesterday.
My goodness,
like,
mate.
I was going up that, and literally you stood up, aren't you? And you're kind of just taking big jumps as we're walking up it. Like, I was thinking I would not want to be running down this.
No.
Do you have any sort of post-race stretching? How are your feet? How are your joints holding up? Is there anything?
So there's a few habits I sort of developed over time. So first of all, in terms of stretching, it's just what I do. So like every day I will spend religiously 30 minutes minimum on stretches. I will just have a bit of a stretching routine. I've got a yoga mat at home. There's a few yoga poses I've learned which are incredibly good for runners. Particularly for stretching your glutes out, because your glutes get battered. So keeping your glutes and your hamstrings. It's always glutes and hamstrings with me. I don't know why. They must be things that get worked the most. So keeping them supple is like mega important. If I don't stretch, I know about it the day afterwards. For racing and after racing, really, it's quite simple, really. It's just a jog. You know, like you want to wind your body down. You know, if you've been, it's hard after a marathon because it's the last thing you want to do. You've finished, but like on a half marathon or whatever, or a 10K, I'll always kind of want to go for 1 or 2 miles, even if it's 9 minute mile, you know, whatever.
Just as you finished, or do you mean like stop, get up back home, and then just go out for a little jog?
No, there and then. So you probably change your kit.
Right. Okay. As then, a warm down, then just change your kit.
And then when I get home, I like a bath You know, like
magnesium soap bath, or
well, interestingly, I don't know what's in them, but I got a recommendation when I was in Japan for these like bath salts that they have, and they were just amazing at like
you noticeable know, really, difference. Yeah, noticeable brilliant. Difference. Yeah.
And I keep on meaning to get some of the magnesium salts because they're supposed to be great, mm-hmm. and it's great for your skin apparently because your skin absorbs it.
Absorbs it,
apparently. So that's supposed
to be
a good
big
stuff.
Organ, isn't it? It's like a big mouth as your skin, isn't it? Yeah.
And then the cryo spa. So I'll give a shout out to Lean Training. If that's all right,
yeah.
And it's a gym half a mile from my house, and they have a cryo spa there, oh, wow. and a sauna,
yeah.
And that is just amazing.
Really?
So like, what's it called? Where do you live? Sorry,
I live in near Clough Bridge in Love Clough, Rosendale.
All right, okay,
so,
yeah.
So yes, so I go there to like tonight when I'm done here, I'll get over to the gym. I'll do a full core and legs workout, and then I'll jump in the cryo spa, just 10 minutes, and then I'll do half an hour in a sauna.
What's the cryo spa? Is it
so literally? It's a cold therapy bath, if you will. So you kind of get in waist deep, and it's got jets, and I think it cools you to about like 2 or 3 degrees.
Yeah. Right, yeah, it's the cryo chamber, isn't it? Yeah, and no it's way.
Honestly, amazing. Like when I started using it, I joined Lean. I think probably 12 months ago, something like that, and I had a really bad Achilles, so I came off which marathon? Boston Marathon. I nursed a bad Achilles all the way through that.
Which was it? Just one? Yeah.
Yeah, left Achilles, I think it was, and it, every so often it'll niggle me again. But that was an horrendous marathon in itself because I literally was running through a storm. There was 35 mile headwind.
Oh my
god! It rained relentlessly all the way. I think the winning time was like 2:15. So you imagine like Jesus people winning Christ. Berlin in 2:01. The right, female okay, winner was 2:35. Yeah. So that was a character building one. It's different subject really, but my Achilles was throbbing off the back of that, and it was throbbing before I went. But I ran through it, and I had a real problem when I got. I could hardly walk. Because I pushed it, but there wasn't any way I wasn't going to run it. So,
oh wow, yeah. So once you get going, it's you're just doing it.
Try and put. I mean, to be fair, I was more worried about getting hypothermia than my Achilles, if I'm honest.
Right.
So,
okay. Yeah.
So
you know it's not going to break. You know it's just pain.
Exactly. It literally should be just temporary pain. I mean, you can't snap them. But it's unlikely. I knew it was just inflammation, so just took some painkillers, cracked on, and
so you do gym work as well. You're saying you do your core and
and the cryo spa helped, and that's why I started doing it. So within, I smashed it every single day for about a month. Mm-hmm. I came off running, just did cross training and whatever, and it sorted itself out, which was fantastic.
Sorry, just stop you there. So what, you know, like a week-to-week training schedules, because we obviously know you're doing a lot of races and you're quite active with your competitions. What's just a general training week for you then? What sort of mileage do you put in?
And I'll tell you what last week was. So bear in mind, this is what I would say is peak. Last week was peak week. So like when you... I'm now in taper mode, really. So let's just talk about last week, because fresh in mind. So on the Monday morning, I did a 5 mile jog on the Fells,
mm-hmm.
And then went to work. Got back from work, went to the gym, and in the gym I tend to do deadlifts. So I'll do 5 sets of deadlifts,
yeah.
And in between the deadlifts, I'll do some power exercises. So okay. I have 90 seconds off, but it's not really off. I'll do
like explosives. Power
jumps.
Yeah.
So I'll do box jumps.
Yeah.
So I'll do 90 seconds of those, and like I say, I'll do those, and I'll probably be doing it about 80% of max weight.
Okay.
Right.
So you're working strength and power there to a certain degree, aren't you?
And then I'll come off that, and I'll do what are they called? Are they called Bulgarian split squats, where you put your
put it on the back of the...
On the bench.
Yeah.
Put your rear leg on the bench and sort of... Mm-hmm. And then
really hard to do.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're brilliant for your core balance.
Yeah.
So I'll do 4 sets of those. Dumbbells on each side, obviously. And then in between those, I'll do... what did I do? I don't know. I think I probably did planks, actually, this week. I'll vary it every single week. I'll do some core exercises. And then I'll do walking lunges then. 3 sets of those, 25 of those, weighted.
Weighted.
Do walking lunges. And this was what Paul, who runs the gym, he gave me some advice. He said, I'll keep it simple for you. You've only got a certain amount of time to do it. I'm going to give you these 3 exercises. I just want you to focus on those.
Wow.
And then in between them, I did like 50 press-ups, in my downtime. So like when I go to the gym, I don't rest.
You're
don't
not stopping. Rest.
I'll just hammer it for like 45 minutes non-stop. Yeah. There's no pissing around on Facebook or whatever.
Messing around.
That's
chilling
in the locker.
And I just
get on with the job I need to do. Then once I've done that, I'll jump in the cryo spa.
Yeah.
Sauna. But then, so Tuesday it was 10K run in the morning into work. I detest the Manchester traffic. So what I'll do is I'll park at Heaton Park.
Okay.
And then I'll run. It's 10K into work.
This is it. I love this
do 4 day at work and then I'll finish.
What is it you do, John? Sorry.
I'm a chief technology officer for a fast fashion company called In The Style. Yeah.
Right, okay.
So that's the day. So it's pretty full on, you know, like 24/7 pretty much job, to be fair. But then I did 10 miles running back. Mm-hmm. So I'm on 20 miles now for the week. And then I repeated that for 3 days.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah. 50 miles, 50 miles, 50 miles, double days. And I got to Friday and I thought, I'm goosed here. Mm-hmm. And bear in mind, I'm doing core every night as well. So I got one of them ab wheel things, which are just a phenomenal.
One of them. And honestly, you just sit around its house just being like, they're the rollers.
No. Ab wheel. Wheel.
And
that keeps your core.
Yeah, keeps your core really
slow. Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
You do it really slowly. And then I'll use a kettlebell to do like, what do you call
side
it?
Side to side.
You put your feet up and then you go side to side to work in. Yes.
You don't need much, do you?
Them ab wheels, we were doing it, weren't we? And I were like, how far can you go down, Lee? You know, because everything becomes a bit of a competition when you're with your mates, doesn't it? You can go well far down. What's going
it's
on
hard,
there?
Because you've got to use... It's all about your core, isn't it? If you're planking as well... Thing is, though, is if you do it... A lot of things you're doing there is when you aren't working on your... when you aren't working on your legs and your cardio endurance... You are generally working on your core there as well, you know, planking and things like that. Like you're saying, when you're getting your times, you seem to have a full. I like that though, because that's one thing I was going to ask you. Are you primarily a runner, etc.? No, you're not. You're working your whole body. You're making sure you're working your whole body.
There's no imbalances, is there, that way?
Yeah, and often sometimes depending if I'm racing, it can cause a bit of fatigue if I do it on a Friday. But I'll also do a HIIT class, and I'll have no trouble whatsoever keeping up with that. So those 3 days, it was funny. I got to Friday and I was feeling quite fatigued. These double days catch up with you. So most I've done is 3 on the bounce of like, and that, so what I'm at now, 50 odd miles come Friday.
Yeah. Mm.
And I managed to get home from work at like 5 o'clock on Friday and the sun was shining. I thought, oh, fuck it. I'm going out again.
Yeah.
I told myself in the morning I wasn't going to do it, but I got there and I thought, I could just squeeze out 5 miles.
I love
miles.
That, man, yeah.
So I got the dog, strapped her up, and I got a Cocker Spaniel, great running dog, and got out on the fells again for just the 5 miles again. And then I did the fell race on Saturday and then did the 3-peak. But I've been relentless. The last 4 weeks, I have been relentless. Like, if I haven't been running, I've been cycling.
Because you said then before, you were like, it's a peak week. I'm at peak week. What did you mean by that?
So it'd be a mileage build. So to keep things simple, I suppose, is if I work back on my Sundays, like I want to do the full things, which we did on Sunday. Sunday before that, I did 20 miles off road, about 3,000 foot, something like that, running just around the Burnley area and where I live. Mm. And then, and that was an interesting adventure for that. I didn't really even know where I was going. I just kind of, I got up to the top of the hills and I saw Hurstwood Reservoir and I thought, I was at Feverley Park. I thought, oh, it's interesting. I'll see if I can find my way there and kind of set off. And I knew in my mind I wanted to be out for 3 hours and I thought the sun was shining. I thought, make the most of it.
Yeah.
And then...
So do you take hydration with you during these long runs then?
I did take some water with me on that one. I used to take a lot of water, but I just take one bottle now. And what I find actually works really well is coconut water. So if I've got that in there,
potassium,
that's brilliant.
Yeah,
for like, that's like a natural electrolyte. That's fantastic stuff. So,
and will you sit... Mad questions. I'm just going to ask them anyway. Are you sipping at that? You're not gulping at that? You're not like...
If I remember, I try and like have a little bit, like probably every 3 or 4 miles. So just a little swig and then crack on from there. So, and then I think I did, if I remember rightly, 18 miles the weekend before, the Sunday before that. So I've kind of built it up, but I was having some hip pain that week. So I had to kind of switch tactics because my hip was giving me real grief. I had to then come off that. I went on the watt bike and various things just to stop running for a few days.
Do you have a watt bike at home?
And I used the one down the gym.
Down at the gym. Yeah.
Brilliant piece of kit. Syncs with the app and all that sort of stuff. And that works really, really well. So you kind of just gauge where your body is. And I don't want to, I don't know. I suppose I'm a junkie.
I can't sit still.
I need to get that endorphin rush, I think.
Yeah. John, the thing is, though, is I think it's like there's weirder things to have an addiction to or a mild addiction to. You know what I mean? We talk about many things on this podcast about things that you can be addicted to. To a certain extent, there can be an unhealthy obsession with working out, but I don't think you have an unhealthy obsession. There are certain people, like, it's hard to say this because I absolutely love them. There are certain people that you kind of like, dude. I mean, David Goggins, he's unbelievable, is David Goggins. He's absolutely incredible, an absolute inspiration. But there can be times when it's like, is it too much? Is that a real unhealthy obsession? Like you said, you know, he spends 3 hours a day he spends 3 hours stretching every day. Do you know what I mean? He talks about that. It's like, kind of like 3 hours. And then he's obviously he's putting in his work before work. And you take a lot of inspiration from him. What this is basically is me asking is, how long do you think this is a sustainable thing for, health beneficial wise? Like, do you, because there is a lot of people that talk about the benefits of health, don't they? And about it being like, they say it's not great for your body to run long distance over a prolonged period of time throughout your life. They can say it can affect your lifespan to a certain degree. How do you feel? And you know what I mean? How do you feel about that? Have you ever heard any of the science towards that in a certain sense?
So as I understand it, what can happen, and we've got someone who knows a lot about more the medical profession than what I do in the room, so we'll maybe get Joe's opinion on this, but as I understand it is... Your heart is a muscle, and you are developing your muscle like you would do any other muscle. And what you can do is you can overdevelop it, as I understand it, and then that can open up the chambers. Is that right, or something like that?
Yeah, they call it floppy heart syndrome, don't they? Yeah, because you can train down though. I think as you get older, if you train down correctly and detrain correctly, it doesn't affect you. There's some that's a post going around on Facebook, isn't there, about the quads of a triathlete. Like a 70-year-old triathlete versus the 70-year-old sedentary person, and they did an MRI on it.
Of the adipose tissue, do you mean?
It's just like you can just see the muscle mass. It's just triathlete, it's and it's like it's what you do.
But in the sense of like of an endurance athlete like yourself,
you have to train down, don't you?
You build the heart to a certain degree. Eventually, as age starts to set in, obviously you'll keep moving. There's no way you're not going to keep moving unless you. Something tragic happens or horrible happens, but you're just going to keep moving and getting older and older and older to get to a point when it's like, is that going to be detrimental to your health as you get older? It's always the thing is with that though, I'm asking that question because I wanted to ask you it, but when I even think about that, it's like I would rather live this long of a life feeling absolutely incredible, you know what I mean, like a king like a king every single day than like living
the guy that I talk to about it who seem to be like really really in the know of what you're talking about. It's cardiomyopathy, which is you're talking
that's
about. It's like you get you end up with pacemakers because your heart's too slow, basically. It goes too slow and it can't contract as it used to get
because
your blood round.
What's your resting heart rate?
Not been overworked. The muscle decays, so it's not as firm, so therefore it doesn't ejaculate the same amount of blood. The heart then, because you're so fit, is used to beating slower. So therefore, you end up having a slow heart rate, but with the contractility isn't as good. So that ends up with where you end up with a pacemaker. But people detrain. You don't need to when you're 60, 70, you're not going to be running 50. You know what I mean?
There's someone I know who's in another running club, and he's probably only... in his mid 30s, and he got a pacemaker fitted, and he's fine. He's back on the fells and running again.
I
don't know the intricacies of why and where and whatever, but
yeah.
I think that to your point is, if you think about it, if you've only got so many heartbeats in your lifetime, what do you want them heartbeats to be used on?
Yeah,
you know, and there's some key priorities in life, isn't it? You know, family is number one. Your immediate family is absolutely number one. And I think then there's a couple other things, which are, your health, I think, is number two. And if you love your work, then that's a good number three. Because that funds the other two things, making those things better, if that makes sense. Because you can't go and run a marathon in Tokyo. You know, it costs a lot of money to do
this. It costs a lot of money,
Five world majors. I don't know how much I've spent in that, but you're going to be into many, many thousands of pounds to do these things. And my work, I love my work, but to an extent, it funds what I really love to do, which is, if I could be a professional athlete full time, I would. I think I've got it in me. I think I've got the ability to. I reckon I could. If I had 5 hours a day, I reckon I could spend it training.
You've got the mindset to do that.
Yeah, I think so. And that time's gone now, in all reality. But then you look at other people in there. You draw inspiration from different people. So there's a chap I know. Kevin Davies is a V55 runner, and he's just done Manchester Marathon on Sunday, and he's done it in 2 hours 57. Right, and I said, that must give you an England Masters vest. Apparently, he was only the 11th V55 at 2 hours 57.
Wow!
So
that's crazy, isn't it?
So, and like you said, there's a lot of other things you could have a healthy, an unhealthy obsession with, and by the way, it can go over the line, you know, like. I think when it starts to overtake your life to the point where it's affecting family,
you can.
And this is the Goggins bit, to be honest, because what he doesn't talk about in his book is really how he manages his life. He's literally, it's work, train, work, train, work, train. There's no mention of his wife or kids or whatever.
Every so often he'll be like, my ex-wife, then my other ex-wife. And it's like, oh, okay. But like you said, he doesn't seem to, that's not something that he touches upon, is the idea of the balance in life. You know what I mean? Like, it's all well being absolutely incredible at what he's doing. But does he cater for the fact that he's ever gonna? I don't think he gives a fuck. I was about to say, does he? I don't even know why. Does he ever get lonely? He'll just tell himself to shut the fuck up and stop being a bitch. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's all about balance at the end of the day. But what I think we're missing is sort of your 10-mile run is to you is what our 2 or 3 mile run would feel like.
Yeah.
You see, so it's like, I've done 50 miles this week. If I did 50 miles, I'd probably get ill. You know, like, because when Luke came, Luke Popper inspired me when he came. I'm sat here, I'm getting inspired again off you, John, to be honest. I am. I'm like, right, I can do this.
Keep doing this.
I can do this. But when Luke came, I had the week after, I was like, I'm training this week. And I trained every day and did like loads and loads for me. And I got to the end of the week and I was like, I'm getting ill. You know, I made myself ill, and I was like, oh, right.
It does, man.
You know, you have to build up to it, and you've been building up to what you can do now for so long that it's your norm.
It doesn't need building up over, like, 10 years or anything. Like, I've gone hard at it, I'd say, for 2 years, I think, 2 or 3 years. Ever since I did Ironman, I think there was a switch that got flicked in my brain. I only really got competitive at running last year, I'd say, when my times really fell.
Why did they fall?
Just graft. I think you just got to keep on working at it and sometimes it's thankless.
And you
end up getting injured and you think the world's against you. I mean, I ended up in a right funk in December. So I got ill. I'm very, very rarely ill. I'm very resilient to illness normally, but I got ill and I couldn't train for a week. Yeah. I got right down in the dumps. I got properly negative.
Sorry. We need to move that car. Sorry,
can you just pause it?
All right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry for that. But yeah, you were talking about your
Yes, we're on the subject, weren't we, of illness? So like. In December, there was a bad cold going around, wasn't it? And I find that if your cold's above your throat, I can train through that and without a problem. It's when it gets on your chest that you've got a real issue. And it hit me when I was just in starting my mileage build, and I was all over the place. I was messaging my coach saying, I think the wheels are falling off. Tokyo's not going to happen. I think we're just going to have to use it as a fun run.
Yeah.
But his advice was brilliant at that point. He just said, get yourself well. It'll come good. Don't worry about it. You'll get there. And I like okay, he calmed me right.
So,
and just
so you do have a coach.
Words of wisdom.
You have a coach.
Yeah. So what I say is a coach. He helps me do. I'm my own coach, but he helps me plan.
Okay. Okay.
So I got back from, and it's a learning experience. So I got. He helped me plan for Boston. Yeah, he helped me plan for Boston. I reached out to him. There's a guy called Terry Longren, and he himself was a fantastic athlete. So he's like a, he's won marathons before, and he's. Yeah. He, I think his PB is like 2:25, right? So I really believe, and if you're going to learn off anyone, talk to the guy who's done it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, for sure.
Don't be listening or to anyone flapping the gums about stuff they don't know what they're on about or who haven't done it before. And there's a lot of people who call themselves coaches that just haven't done it, right?
Yeah.
You want to do something as specific as a marathon, speak to the marathon guy. And I was struggling with my accolades, and he gave me some tips and whatever, and he just got talking to me. He has some association with our club. He used to run Up and Running. I think he's got a shop over in... not Up and Running. The Complete Runner, sorry. He's got one in Bradford as well, a shop in there.
And
when I was a kid, he used to have a shop near where I used to live. I used to walk past, see these fancy trainers every morning or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And it's funny how these things, he's 70-odd now, and he's fantastic.
It's
he's
like a full circle type thing, yeah.
He still runs like a 59-minute 10K.
He says
when it's over 60 minutes, he'll maybe retire, but at the moment, he's still cracking on. But he helped me just set out a proper structured plan and just did a few tweaks with me about where I was training and what I was training to do. And I got back from Boston, we re-reviewed the plan. All he needed was like an hour of his time and wisdom.
Yeah.
Like, because what I would do is I went away busily, did my new plan for Chicago, thought, right, that's what I'm going to do. I put in a load of cross-country races and various things. And he sat me down and he said, what are you doing all that for? And I'm like, what do you mean? He said, you've got a race there. You're racing every week. He said, how are you going to get your mileage in and how are you going to... I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. and I needed to just literally red pen the entire plan. And then he was asking me about training at the track. I was doing a bit of training at the track. And he's like... And they'd be more like 400 or 500 reps. And he's like, well, what are you going to get from that? And he said, you've got a busy life. You've got a busy job. You need to be training where you work and you need to be doing the longer reps. And then we put a structure where 1 week I do 1 mile reps. The next week I'll do 2 mile reps. The next week I'll do tempo and I'll cycle it round. Next week I might do hill reps or whatever. One hard session a week on a Wednesday. Now, what I was doing is I was killing myself on a Tuesday and a Thursday, as well as trying to do long runs on a Sunday. Bizarrely, I end up tired. So 80% of my running, I would say, is in that aerobic zone. 80%. I want my heart rate under 140. It's really important that I manage that.
So it's relaxed. It's a decent pace. You're not blowing. You're not pushing yourself that hard.
And the danger is when you start, you go everywhere at like 7 minute miling. There's one thing that ends up being is one, you don't improve your times.
Mm-hmm.
You will get, obviously, from sedentary to doing that, obviously you're going to get some gains, but you'll plateau, which is what I found very, very quickly.
Really quickly, yeah.
And you end up injured.
Right,
two things. And they are just inevitable. And you also just race like a lunatic all the time. You think, oh, this is great. I'm running now. I'm racing everywhere. It's no good. It's no
super
good.
Clever. You're right, man. Definitely.
You need
right.
to and having someone there as a sounding board. So, is he a coach? No, because now he's taught me after two cycles about how to plan myself.
Okay.
So now I'm very self-sufficient.
Yeah.
I do all my runs on my own.
You're a clever guy as well. So you only need to be taught it a few
times.
Honestly,
I've got OCD with it. Or like I've sat down for hours, like planning out on a spreadsheet what I need to be doing, when I need to be doing, and being strategic about what I'm trying to do. So any of the races that I'll do, they won't be just for the sake of racing. They'll be for a reason. I raced on Saturday because I'm doing the Three Peaks. I need to do some off-road. I'll probably do a fell race this Saturday coming up, as long as the shin heals. And do you know what I mean? Because I'm doing the Three Peaks.
Yeah.
So when
it's
I
more
do
of
race,
a specific skill to a certain degree. You've got 100%. To train for what you're doing. Yeah.
And practice at that. So yeah. So for Berlin, I'm on it. I kind of know what I need to do. And I won't have the travel of Tokyo. So, which is massive, a 12-hour flight,
yeah,
huge time zone difference.
And
one day I'll get some decent weather, so that's got to drop for me sooner or later. I ended up...
Just like the storm runner, right?
Yeah. And ended up having... I got a cold when I was out there. Everyone wears these masks out there, and yeah, I know why, because the flipping Japanese flu's rife. So ended up getting a cold while I was out there. To be honest, I put it to the back of my mind for 3 hours. It was what it was. So,
yeah.
But that, it does have an effect on your performance when you can't breathe properly. So there was a few things that didn't quite drop for me. So even if those things had dropped in my direction and I didn't have to travel to the other side of the world, which was part of the bonus, I suppose, there's a couple of minutes to be had there.
You know?
And I'd only just started doing the gym work for 3 or 4 months before that. Mm-hmm. And I'll have had 12 months at that. Do you know what I mean? So I think, and it takes time for that strength to build. You know, you can't just go to gym for 3 months and suddenly you're going to get exponential gains. Ain't going to happen. Because Paul, you know, like I was saying to Paul at the gym, I said, what can I be doing now? Let's change it up. Let's do something. And he said, whoa, slow down.
Keep
doing what you're doing and just increase the weight. He said, if it's not broke, you don't need to fix it. So did you feel better? Did you feel stronger towards the latter miles? Because that's what our objective was. And I said, I didn't have any cramp or anything like that. So it is getting there. And I felt good when I did the fell run on the Saturday. I was climbing better than I've ever climbed before. And I'm not really doing a lot of it.
You've got more power.
Yeah, that's just through them deadlifts. I'm absolutely convinced of it. So
Amazing. Yeah. That's wicked, man. That's absolutely wicked. Because you don't even think about that kind of thing. And also, I think the idea of having someone to rein your neck in to a certain degree, I think if you can know yourself so well that you're like, oh, I'm just going to keep pushing it and keep pushing it and keep doing more than you really, really don't even need to do. You know what I mean? A lot of that, because like you say as well, you have a life to live. You're an incredible athlete, but you will understand what I'm saying when you're not, it's not a professional athlete in a sense that you're getting paid thousands and thousands to do it. You have a daughter and you have a life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you pay no attention to that. Then you suddenly become a lonely runner, you know what I mean, with not much going for you. You know, it's like, right, well, I've got this to do and I've got this to do. I've got work as well. It's one of the hardest things in existence is to, and especially this day and age, if people to pay attention to like the angst of living in social media and all this kind of, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. We get so on these guys that are like David Goggins or people that are just doing things that are just way beyond you can even imagine, and then you get inspired by them before you realize that you get depressed at the fact that you don't have that time, or you don't think you have that time, but you've not got the time management skills to actually do that. Or do you really want it enough to do it? Well, then you weed yourself out before you know it. It's hard to get to where you want to get to. So I admire you in a sense with what you're doing and how you've done what you've done, because you have, like you say, you have a wife and you have a daughter and you are a family man. And not only that, you're fucking killing it as well.
You know what I mean?
The root of that though is obsessive time management. So
it's the only way.
And making the most of every minute, like, I don't really have any downs. So even like at lunchtime, if I've not got my running in the morning at work, I'll go and run at lunchtime. And if I'm not running at lunchtime, I'll go and do at least a 2 mile walk.
Yeah.
Because it refreshes my brain as well. Mm-hmm. I'm sat at a desk all morning and trying to problem solve for a lot of that. And there's various things going on and your brain gets fatigued.
Yeah.
There's one or two ways of dealing with that. Some people go for a power nap.
Yeah.
I go for a walk.
Yeah.
And I'll feel amazing. I'll go for a 60 minute walk. And I'll come back and I'm ready to hit it again.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that spend a lot of time pissing around and procrastinating a lot of things that they do. But when I hit it, no matter what it is, whether it's a task
at work
or training.
Where do you think that comes from? That sort of mentality.
What I will say is amazing about you. You do the things that you do, and it's good. It's fucking good. But you see an OCD with it. I think that might spill over when that seed was sown in your head. So then you thought, oh, I'm going to do this. Then you become obsessive about it. And you're like, all right, okay, if this is the way it's going to be, then it's going to be like this. And you sharp focus everything. So that's
So my granddad was a huge inspiration for me. And he grafted really, really hard. He was nonstop. And, you know, he always said to me, don't even start a job unless you're going to complete it properly. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And he instilled that in me. from a very young age, and I idolised my granddad. Absolutely idolised him, and it ingrained in me in a work habit. And to be fair, I've always been very career focused, so that's where I put a lot of energy in. And if you're going to put energy into your career any time, it's when you're young, really. So I started work at 16. So I didn't go to, I did a modern apprenticeship, and I then and I just worked my. I wasn't afraid of work until 3 a.m. I didn't care. I didn't care that I would finish work at 5 o'clock for say finish and spend 3 or 4 hours of an evening reading, setting up labs, and learning how to write code and and what. And I've had to work incredibly hard. Nothing's come easy, you know. Nothing's and. At school, I wasn't naturally intelligent or whatever. I think I've got. I think my wife would probably argue. Actually, I'm laughing at it now because she probably tells me I've got no common sense. But I'd like to think I am quite. I'd like to think I am. I am quite streetwise, and I'm. When I get my teeth into something, I'm either probably not arsed whatsoever. I mean, literally to the point where I just couldn't care less. Or like I am properly full on. And there's very few things that I'm kind of in the middle of. And they're the things I enjoy focusing my time and energy on. So it has been ingrained in me. I left home at 17 and I went lodging at that time. I was earning probably 40 quid a week and half of that money went on board at lodgings or whatever. But you know, I had freedom, which was great, and I just had to work. And the fruits like labour, you get to the point where you're in a position where I am now, where it's more about inspiring others, and you kind of, I am saying this smiling, like you work to rule.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But, you know, and the other people there are doing the engineering work, you know, which you've done before. And like I was saying about the marathon, you're not going to listen to the guy who's never done the job you've done before. So I understand how to solve those problems. And whilst I might work through those problems, I'm not actually writing the code anymore. So, but that gives me the freedom. And I see a lot of people that want the instant gratification, and whether that's I wish I could run that sub 40 10k, you're like, well, what you're doing, I'm running 50 miles, it ain't gonna happen.
That's not gonna
forget it.
Let's
start by losing a stone in weight, and then we'll go from there. And last, well, how do you run so fast? I'm like, well, I just train and I work hard at it, and I'll never be able to do that. Of course you can. I believe that anyone who applies themselves, don't get me wrong, putting physical, obviously, disabilities or whatever to one side like that, normal human being can achieve almost anything.
Yeah.
Anything you set your mind on, I truly believe there's untapped potential in everyone where you can kind of push yourself harder than you could ever imagine.
100%.
And my outlet happens to be through this physical activity. Before, let's say, rewind the clock 10, 15 years ago, it was all about work. All about work. All that obsession. And now a lot of my obsession is about seeing what I can really achieve and what is that untapped potential now. And I've got this itch I need to scratch, which is to get that 2:30 marathon. And then I'm probably going to move on from that. Maybe I'll do ultras or whatever it might be. I don't know yet, because it's dangerous to think beyond it. I can't afford to think beyond that, because it's got to consume me.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It's grabbed me by the balls, this thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I was just about to say, what's the plan going forwards? But
it's already there. It's already there. Yeah. And that's the idea with that kind of thing. I definitely live a life by, if you're ever going to do something, you've got to do it fucking amazingly well. You know what I mean? Because you're only here for a certain period of time and there's a legacy to be left. You know, I had this when I was a kid. I started doing performing arts, and I was like, well, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to be remembered in that way. This is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to put everything into it. And then you're like, I'm going to be a musician. And then it's like, right, well, if that's the case, I'm going to be really well known at this. So I was trying to put everything into this until I stuck on something, as in like being a tattoo artist or something like that. And as soon as it stuck, I was like, you know what? This is what I'm going to do to the best of my ability. And to this day, I am grinding every single time I get home. I'm drawing, painting, trying every little outlet to try and get that little bit more ahead of me, you know what I mean? Not anyone else around this area, of myself. You know what I mean? I have a vision for myself and where I want to be with that. And then also you got your own like physical things that you're doing, but that's your work that you're talking. Mm. You've got your work now. You've got your work. You want to be really good at your job. You don't want to be shit at your job, do you? You want.
Absolutely not.
So if you're going to do something for what, 8 hours a day?
Yeah, if not more. Sometimes.
If not more, so yeah. You're going to do it well, aren't you? You're going to do it fucking well.
Rhonda Patrick was saying though, weren't she? She was saying that your cardiovascular health helps neurology, so it helps you become more focused.
Yeah.
So like one feeds the other.
Yeah, you know, I can see that. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I was astute and sharp focus of you. You know, I've met you now, and you're talking to you. It's like, yeah, you can see that you put the hours in because you've worked your body that much that your mind is just. You're free, and it's firing to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Bring it on, let's go. And it's not like muddled, tired, kerfuffled, or in any way distracted by anything else. And that's because your nutrition's where it needs to be. You drink enough water, you know, all this kind of stuff. You work your body. And I think that's where a lot of people, I think that's the one thing I've discovered after being a fat kid and stuff like that is the idea of like, if there's going to be anything that you're going to do for yourself, any reason to eat well, any reason to do these things for you and to have a regular training schedule, is just how good life is and how good it is to be in your own body when you do that, when you give that to yourself. Do you know what I mean? Even if you're not going to be or running, if doing an Ironman or doing this, even if that person's just got a regular schedule of training and having a good nutrition plan, how good it feels to just feel good, you know what I mean? Because
that's definitely my wife is of that ilk. So she'll go that gym I mentioned down the road from me. She'll go down there 5 times a week and do. She loves all the HIIT classes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
she's not bothered about running the marathon. She couldn't care less. But she does that to feel good about herself. She feels good about her body.
Yeah,
you know she cooks phenomenal food for us. You know, she really looks after us from that perspective. And whatever it is, just like this. It breaks my heart to like, you know, people that you're close to as well who are, who I think are just eroding away their life. Yeah. And there's only one person that's going to help you, and that's you. Mm. Because a lot of the time, if you give advice or whatever, it just falls on deaf ears. Because the first thing that happens, the human nature is that when someone's giving you that feedback, is that they put the sword and shield up and they become defensive.
The ego,
and at that point, they're just not listening. You can't get through to people. Yeah. And what bothers me more than anything is they're going to find out too late. Yes. You're going to find out too late. You're going to find out when you're in your 60s, and you're going to look back and think, this is the thing which has stuck with me throughout my life as well, is like... what is your tombstone going to say about you?
Yes.
So when you're gone, here lies John. He did fuck all with his time and achieved nothing. Yeah. That is, I tell you, whatever it does say, I do not want it to say that.
No, don't want it to say that. You don't, you're writing your own book, John. That's what you're doing. Yeah. And that's what everyone's doing, aren't they?
Yeah,
and the sooner you realise that, the better the book's going to be. But people don't realise that until it's too fucking late. And that's what sucks about everybody's life is the exact same of the exact same worth. That's why, you know, racism's ridiculous and all this kind of stuff. Every human is born pretty much equal. So you've got your own little journey and your own little book to write. How you want that to be read and what you want to be in that is completely up to you. So many people go through it with writing a book which no one would ever pick up. Do you know what I mean? And I think you're completely right with that. Some people never realize that, but then some people realize, and then they can't achieve what they really wanted to achieve. You know, like, I wish I could do that. You know what I mean? But I'm this old now. Well, you can try, you know, and all that kind of stuff. You can.
There is always the reason, isn't there? There's always the, oh, but I can't because
of this. Yeah.
And let's be honest, most of the time, that's just bullshit.
Yeah. I've got an overactive thyroid. I can't do, you know,
whatever, you know, like. Anyone can do a 2 mile walk a day.
Yes.
Anyone can walk their dog twice a day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just simple incremental changes. I mean, like what I do, it ain't for everyone. You know, like you could, I am genuinely obsessive and it isn't for everyone. Not everyone's made like that.
No.
And particularly a lot of like, you've got a lot of creative outlets and I think that you'll probably find a lot of satisfaction in that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't have my day job. Whilst I enjoy solving problems, I don't have that creative. And I think that my outlet is running.
It's your artwork,
and,
man.
Yeah, it is my artwork. It's my tapestry, and you're drawing your tapestry out. And I think that when you do like finish, what I have to do is when I finish one thing, I've got to book the next.
Yeah.
Otherwise, again, I can feel this. I know because I've been there before. Like when I'd done Iron Man, I had obsessed for 9 months. It's all I thought about every single day. I got up in the morning, had to get after it, trained twice a day, swimming, running, cycling, hours and hours and hours and hours. And then it's gone.
Yeah.
You know.
These things
vanish in an instant. And you'd think, right, you work so hard and Tokyo is fresh in my mind to an extent. But you know what I thought as soon as I'd done it? What next?
Yeah.
I must be honest. I probably felt satisfied for 30 seconds, and it's gone. It's in the history book, that, isn't it?
And I'm not.
Some people are, and some people are not. But I'm not very backwards referenced.
Okay.
So like, I've got to really think. You know, when you ask me about my past, and sometimes I can just skirt across detail, because I don't dwell on it. I don't think about it. I'm on to the next thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that 30 seconds of pleasure, it's good to have that in the cookie jar. You know what I mean?
Goggins talks about,
So stick that in the cookie jar, but it's fucking done.
Yeah, it's done.
It's done. You've done your Ironman, bang, off. What's next? And I think that doing that kind of pushes you forward. And if you don't, like, I remember like finishing Ironman and thinking like, what now? I like finished that, across that finish line, biggest buzz in the world. There's nothing. So what you got to do? Pick yourself up, dust yourself back off again. What do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? And set them plans again. Yeah. What's that next milestone going to be? The trouble is you can't think much beyond what you're doing, because there's a danger that you end up sloppy in your thinking and sloppy in your in how you're setting out your tasks. So I think that, and yeah, that's where the obsession can be maybe a downfall, in that if you don't keep on pushing and finding that next thing, then you can end up genuinely I've ended up depressed.
There we go. I was about to say,
it's okay. A fine line,
so
into
it's a fine line, isn't it? So yeah. There's a certain amount what I was going to say, but I was waiting for you to finish, is the idea, and what you were nearly segueing onto is the idea of like, well, if there isn't anything after that, there's the decline in mental health. And it's like, and that's what I think. It's so scary, isn't it? Because, you know, like, you can be so switched on, you can be so astute with your plans and how you attack life, but just that one slip up of like, you finish something and you don't have any more plans, you feel like you've accomplished what you need to accomplish, then slowly you're not working out as much as you are. I feel like you're the kind of person that works out as much as you can to keep. Because if you didn't do that, say if you missed 2 or 3 days, say if you missed a week's worth and you just did bitty training, you know you're accountable to yourself what you're actually doing. Accountability is a massive thing, isn't it? You know, like, I think it's scary that you can see your own mental health decline. You know, in a sense, yeah. not like, oh my God, I'm
but that's what it is, isn't it? Is if you have a goal, I have a focus, then that's what you're focusing on. If you don't have a goal and don't have a focus, that's where you become.
Then what is it? What are you doing?
I think what happens is you just become disengaged. I think you become disengaged, and the impact, and it's particularly if I'm like struggling with fitness as well. Like, you know, when I felt really, in December, I wanted to throw a towel in. It was, by the way, and you know, looking back, my response to that was completely and totally out of proportion of the actual problem I had.
Yeah.
God's sake, I had a cold and I needed to stop training for 7 consecutive days. But I felt, not only did I have a cold, which obviously I felt really bad about, I felt bad in myself anyway, but I felt like shit because I couldn't train. Yeah. And I was worse in my head.
You're like, oh
my
God.
And I was winding myself up, thinking like, how am I going to get the mileage in now? I'm going to play catch up with... It's... Like I say, your mind plays tricks on you. Your mind is telling you, oh, that set you back now. You're not going to be able to get to, oh, let's accept a fun run. But then actually, a few words of wisdom, as we mentioned before, and then you can get yourself back on. And it's, you need people in your life that can, if you slip off them rails, that can just gently put you back on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't need leeches.
They see the signs.
Yeah. They just put you back. That's all right. No, you'll be all right. You can just do this and you can just do that. I completely get what you're saying there. It's the hardest thing, though, isn't it? It's saying them things like you're saying there. One, you're actually ill, but then two, you while you're ill, you're overthinking everything, aren't you? Because you're your own worst enemy. If you're overthinking things, it becomes way bigger than it actually is. In actual fact, like you said, it's 7 fucking days. I'm absolutely fine. It's nothing to worry exactly. about, is it? But you're thinking like the rest of the people are out there. You know, like you're saying it's 7 days, but you're like, man, like that's 7 days worth of running that my opponents have been doing, and I haven't been fucking doing it. And you know what I mean? And you start overthinking, it becomes way bigger than it is.
Yeah, and I think that's the I quite like that I've got this kind of dark side to me in terms it's of good, being yeah. able to dig deep into and find places of. So going back to this thing about the 30 seconds of elation after you've done it, I love the grind.
Right, okay.
I love the grind.
Would you say you love the grind more than you love the elation of ticking that box? You know,
Yeah. I think the work is what develops character. And sometimes, like, you get certain points in your training, like, yesterday hurt. I'll remember that.
Yeah.
And when I look back after when I've not got the pain, I'll look back and I think, yeah. Because we were talking to each other yesterday. We'll be the first because you were up early, weren't you? You were out there at 6 o'clock. We were up there at 7. We're like, we'll be the first people to finish the Three Peaks today.
Yeah.
There'll be no one else up this early. There'll be no one else getting up at 5 a.m. And it kind of makes me buzz that when it was snowing in I did 2 10-mile runs in and out of work. I didn't park at Eaton Park. I thought, screw that, I'm parking in Bury.
Wow.
And then I ran 10 miles from Bury. and then heavens opened. It was snowing or whatever. And I thought, let's have it.
Yeah.
And I was slipping everywhere on the way home. And I was like, oh, God, this is the worst thing in the world. But you know what? When I got in my car, I thought, hell yeah.
Nobody else has done that today.
I've had this. Who else is going to do that?
No one, John. Yeah, exactly.
This is funny because obviously, like, we can't ask you the question of do you ever feel like not going? Because it's quite obvious that you don't ever get that sort of genuine feeling of, like, I'm not doing that today. What does your wife make of it? Does she take you on holiday, and what do you do when you're on holiday, or like how does she cope? How does she manage it? I'm interested.
So it's interesting, really. I will admit, I'm not the best at managing this, but I am learning. So we're gonna go to Abasok for over Easter. Because Japan was so full on. Honest, I was so tired when I got back that it didn't feel like a holiday genuinely. And so Abasok, I've already sort of said, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if we go to Snowdon? And I'm already planning now to that Ruby and Joanna go up on the train. I'm running up, and I've already checked it out. I thought, yeah, you can stop at Lambaris. It's halfway. You could stop off there. I can run up Snowdon and back. But that's where kind of managing these things, having these international marathons is an opportunity to. Ruby's gone to Chicago, you know, we've gone to Boston, we've come to London. And actually, it's become a family thing. Ruby now loves running. She loves running. She did all the Grand Prix last year. She runs for Burnley AC.
Amazing.
She did the cross countries. Fantastic little runner. She's 8 years old. And amazing. She ran 9... She got a PB yesterday at the part run. And she did I think it's a 2-kilometre run. And she did it in just over 9 minutes.
Wow.
That girl is
man.
Gifted. And I don't push her, right? Let's just be clear. I do not push her. This is totally herself.
She's seen you and she's
and getting
I, and
it that's
from
the
you,
inspiration.
Though,
yeah. My granddad inspired me and I want to be that kind of inspiration to her. But I think sometimes you can just lead by example. And there's a kind of she will understand more as she gets older that what it means to work hard. And like I said, no one drags her out of bed. She wants to do it herself, you know, like she's gone down with a mum and she's done that sort of thing. So I think children mirror what they see, the good habits and the bad habits. And we're not infallible, you know, like I'll have to kick myself sometimes. Like, so it's funny yesterday, just a little funny anecdote. So I'm walking the dog. So I've got back. I've had a full on day. I've been to watch this. It was 3 hours to watch this dance festival Ruby done. I've gone back. First thing I had to do was walk the dogs.
Yeah.
So I'm out there. The wind's blowing. It's howling. I'm on the phone to Joanne because where we live is 1,000 foot up. So it's like it can get a bit hairy.
Right, okay,
so I'm trying to listen. Joanne's telling me what she wants for the Chinese order. and then there's a mountain biker flying down the hill. I've got both my dogs off the lead, and I'm like, and I don't realise she's on speakerphone, and I'm screaming at her.
Just for,
yeah, for fuck's sake, you fucking come back. And Joanne says, I am on speakerphone and Ruby's listening. I'm like, oh dear.
Right, yeah.
Sorry. Let me call you back. So I had to bomb off. I had to bomb off after the dogs to try and get them back on the lead. And
amazing.
Yeah. So you got you. See, they will become. See, I was the antithesis of this, right? So yeah. I wanted to do anything to be in. I wanted to be the opposite of my parental example.
Yeah.
And I love my mum and we've got a really good relationship now. But at the time, particularly my teenagers, not getting wrong, I was probably difficult to be fair. The example I got set, I don't believe is the example I want to set for my daughter. Let's just say that.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, it's, I find that you set that example. She knows on a Sunday morning, like, if I've got to do something with Joanne and Ruby, I'll get up at 4:30, 5, whatever it takes. If I go to a 3-hour run, then I'll just do it.
Yeah.
And she sees that.
Yeah. Yeah.
She sees me like, she must, I don't know what she thinks when she, I'll just get down just sort of in press ups because I'm bored and I just want to do something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's good, man. It's good. I got the indoor bike at home, or if it's not that, then it's trying to get the 100 press ups in a day or something.
You were saying that, yeah.
But like the indoor bike, like I've only had that now for 3 weeks. And then for the first week though, I was doing it on my own for a bit, but and then it was just me and my daughter on the Friday. And she was doing something. I think she was drawing or she was watching TV or something. I was just like, I'm just going to go in the room. I'm just going to go in for 40 minutes. I'm just going to go on the bike. She's like, all right, okay. And I lasted about 20 minutes or so before she came in. Next thing you know, she's egging me on. She's cheering me on. She's wanting to give me my water bottle, which is just there. It's all right. It doesn't matter, you know. But she's like, can I give you a water bottle? And all that kind of stuff. And I think it's mad. I think if you keep doing that in front of them.
Yeah, you install behavior, don't you? Yeah.
You're just doing it without forcing, aren't you? Because they're inspired by. Think about you. You're getting inspired by people. I'm getting inspired by people. Yeah. And we're adults, you know what I mean? We're nothing but just grown-up children. You know what I mean? We're just getting inspired constantly all the time.
Same with the smoking thing, innit? It's not only like smoking around kids is bad for them, but they're looking at you.
Yeah.
Watching you do
that's
it.
That's acceptable.
And then it's like, you know, like, and you see it, like, obviously, when you become a parent, you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, you're like,
it's
what are you
bad.
Doing
it's
there?
Bad. Have you ever had any addictions? Well, to a certain extent, like, are you a drinker or have you smoked before?
I drink occasionally. I have a rule where I don't allow a drink to affect my training. So if I do have a drink, I'm going to suffer. And you know what I mean? More than I was going to put myself through anyway.
Yeah.
So I tend to just make sure that if I have a drink, it's a couple of drinks, not 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have late nights. I just don't do it. So I have no interest in that. If I'm honest, I have no interest in
I'm
that.
I'm with you, man.
Even on weekends, I want to be in bed for 10 off 10.
Yeah.
I watch a film or whatever. Chew on some popcorn or whatever, have a couple of glasses of wine, but that's me. I'm happy and content with that. So
advice for you in a certain sense, and it's just I'm
capable of it. I'll be honest with you, I'm very capable of it. So I've got I started footy accumulator betting, and it never got out of hand, but it was
before you know it.
It was small beer,
you're
betting, but it escalates. You start betting 10p here, 20p
and
you probably win probably one in like 100 bets or whatever, but you get that buzz and think, right, worse, you start chasing it and you start trying to accumulate and recoup your losses, and I could get obsessed. Where you might spend on an accumulator 40 quid. That's just wrong. You know what I mean?
It's true, man. I know exactly what you're saying.
Some people don't stop and they'll get to the point where they're spending 500 quid.
Yeah,
whereas I got to the point where I had to delete my account because I knew I'd gone way too far with it.
But how good's that you recognise it and then just delete? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I see that and bye-bye. You know what I mean?
And social media is the same, you know? Yep. I got to the point where, you know, Facebook was coming a bad habit. I couldn't even explain why. They designed these things to be a bad habit.
Yeah, the algorithms are there. Right?
And my wife does have to remind me every so often just to put the bloody thing away, put your phone away. And I've always got the excuse, right, that it is an excuse, and I will admit it to you. I've never admitted it to John, I don't think, in that because my work is full on, and a lot of the work communication is either on Slack or on WhatsApp or whatever, and I do need to be able to check the website to make sure it's up, and, you know, like, because you can have 100,000 people visiting our website in a day.
Yeah.
So, and the consequences of it not working are quite severe, you know? Yeah, so, yeah. I'll use that as a bit of an but it's a shit excuse, you know? Yeah. You can put it down to have dinner, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had to learn that. And we had a running banter chat, and I've just got rid of it now because it's just, it was becoming where you were like spending 30-40 minutes, like keep on messaging each other. But it's, yeah, and it's all, as David Goggins would say, it's just all bullshit.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Oh gosh, something I have to check for myself. It just really is. It is just bullshit. And you can be even in the middle of it and just acknowledging that it's bullshit, but still, just still eating it, still consuming the bullshit. You know what I mean? It's so hard to actually acknowledge it, rectify the mistake, you know, like acknowledge it, do something about it and move on. But it's, I don't know.
The program that way, aren't they?
Yeah, the
You're
program.
You're not infallible to stuff that is addictive, basically.
Exactly.
But when you, like you, John, you have got an addictive personality. But the beauty of what's happened with you is your addictions have been good for you. Do you know what I mean? The good addictions, the sports and that sort of thing.
So yeah.
You've not let yourself slip into bad addictions.
Yeah. And what, so one of the last few things that we'll bring up with you, man, sleep. How do you deal with that? Because obviously, as we are more aware nowadays, that sleep is a massive recovery tool.
You sleep so deep, really. It's running
around. Yeah, I don't know.
Do you quantify it? Do you acknowledge it? Do you look at your sleep? Do you?
So, like I say, I think 10 o'clock is absolutely my curfew. And I'll read fiction for half an hour. So I love historical novels, Wilbur Smith and Bernard Cornwell. I love reading about Vikings.
And
I find that it just takes my mind into a world where it's just not...
Yeah. Ready to dream, not John. Life. Yeah.
And it just stimulates your mind to like get yourself in a dream state. And that's great. And I'll do that, even if I just read 10 pages or whatever. But I'm lights out. Half 10, that's it. I'm done.
Your latency, boom.
Yeah, and then I'm up again about... typically about 5:30 to 6 in the morning, but like I knew I would be tired off yesterday. So I give myself till 6:30 this morning just to get that extra hour because you do need it to recover. And as the week goes on, as I mentioned, with these double days, putting probably 20 hours of training in a week, it does catch up with you. Honestly, you can end up dog tired and overtrained. So that's key. But I like to, my biggest problem with sleep is needing to go to toilet. I don't know what it is.
Oh, mate.
Yeah.
High five.
And it's got, as I've got older.
Tough gig, that, isn't it? Waking up at like 2 or 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and all you got to do is you got to go to the toilet. And it's like, man, it's so frustrating because that does affect your sleep. It does affect your sleep because it's restfulness. You know, if it's broken in the middle, it's broken. And broken sleep is not good. You know what I mean? But it's like, man, I don't.
There's no way around it.
There's no way around it to a certain extent. You can try. Yeah, but then they say that drinking before bedtime's good for you to a certain degree. Water.
What do you do?
Like, you know what I mean? So it's like what.
So tonight I'll go in the sauna, which is deliberately going to dehydrate me. I won't come out of that till about 8:30. What are you going
to
do?
You've got to hydrate.
You literally your pee's going to run brown after that. And this is where alcohol plays a part. So if I have a few drinks, literally I'll be up every hour. That is terrible. And not only do you have the hangover the next day, you're fatigued from that lack of sleep. But I do see the other thing. I like to have there's a protein drink called it's called micellar casein, and it's an overnight. You know, like you have a whey protein and you have micellar casein. Yeah. And it's an overnight protein which is great for endurance athletes. It repairs your muscles overnight, and I do have that.
Oh, wow.
And there's something about protein, I believe, where it does actually make you want to pee.
Yeah.
Especially if you have too much.
Yeah.
But I have that before bed because I think the trade-off is worthwhile. Because it has given me exponential ability to be able to bounce back the next day.
Yeah.
Because like I say, it does help repair your body all the time when you're sleeping.
There's never going to be a perfect answer to that. It just is what it is.
Yeah. You're not going to lie there and just.
So the thing is you would when you are waking up to go to the toilet. You're coming out of your sleep cycle, though. You won't be doing it during REM and deep sleep.
No, yeah, it will bring you out of your sleep cycle. Yeah. You're not like, I need a wee. Oh, you know, it's like as if somebody's clapping their hands in front of you. Yeah,
I found like I had to, because obviously I work shifts as well. So in the daytime, I had to literally like keep my eyes closed because obviously the light would wake me up.
Yeah.
It's like, it's all about like, once you're going for a piss, you're feeling your way there. Your
eyes that's closed. What I try and do. Try and just keep my eyes as close as possible.
Yeah. Stand
and
there, not zombie.
Think, not start thinking.
And I'm not so bad about getting back. Yeah, as soon as you engage your brain. I tell you if you pick up your phone after you've been for a pee, you are screwed for a good half an hour. That's a thing you just should never
leave
do.
Don't let that blue light in the middle of the night, definitely.
Lee put me onto it, really. We get blue light blocking glasses. Couple of hours before bed, you put these glasses on, it stops the blue light going into your eyes and it sets you into a deeper sleep. And it honestly does.
I can imagine that, yeah.
It's related to the circadian rhythm and the idea of like the light's up now, but by the time it gets to 7 o'clock, or past 7 o'clock, the sun's going to go down. And generally, if you're going to take yourself back to times when we'll be living outside, it's generally the times when we're going to go to sleep. Yep. You know what I mean? We're going to bunker up and get in and just go to sleep. But so it's kind of related to that, and it works definitely. The sleep science behind it works.
It definitely works.
But I was talking to my mate Daz about this the other day, and I think this is this is definitely true. Is the amount of the more we know about everything. I think it's like you can overthink things, can't you?
And try and do too many things.
Yes.
Change too many things at once.
Yeah, exactly.
And then not have a clue what you've actually done, like, which is meant to benefit or not.
Yeah, exactly. You can't notice that, like you're saying, when you're talking about the body fuel, while you're fueling yourself with fats or carbohydrates, and noticing how good carbohydrates, the energy from good carbohydrates make you feel. If you change too many things at once, then you don't know what's good or what's bad. And I think that people get hung up, because the guy was talking, and we spoke about this before, the guy who invented the Oura Ring, or it's just a sleep quantification device, and we were talking about that. It's talking about, do you ever get too much into, say, like if the a science, night comes, if a night comes and you don't sleep properly, you know, how bad you feel from it. It's like, you've got to let that stuff just fucking wash over your head and then get a good night's sleep the night before. Night after that, you know what I mean? Don't let it get to you.
I don't know, like, whether you're the same as me, but because I knew I was doing the Three Peaks on Sunday, I had a terrible night's sleep.
So bad. I think I had...
It was running through my mind over and over and over and over. I reckon I got 1 hour of broken sleep.
Honestly. What did I look? So I went to bed at 10 and woke up at 3. I'd had a pee in between it, but woke up at 3. And I was like, I don't need a wee. Why have I woke up? My clock's set for 4:30. Why have I woke up? Oh, I was about to sleep. Couldn't worry about sleep.
Unconscious mind.
Yeah,
I was tossing and turning all night. I'm too hot. Oh, I'm uncomfortable. You turn over to your left side. No, I want to go to my right side. My pillows aren't right. And whatever. It's just like, it's so frustrating though, because you think to yourself, I need to sleep. And like, more you wind yourself up about needing to sleep, the worse it actually gets.
Catch-22.
Oh, so negative bad. Because you know what you've got ahead of you, man. That's what it is.
And I tell you what it is. It's the fear of the unknown. Like, I slept like a baby because of what I'd done the prep the day before. I'd gone to the start area and I knew what that was about. I got all my gear laid out. That was all cool. My hydration was sorted, my nutrition was sorted, and I had a really peaceful night's sleep. And I knew I'd done the work.
Yeah.
Whereas yesterday, it was the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. Yeah.
Because the fear of the unknown is where you really wind yourself up. Don't you?
Like, it's usually worse than...
It, man. It's scary, isn't it, man?
You're imagining monsters jumping out of the top of the cover or something like that, or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. But it's
weird, because yesterday I did... I trained regularly 3-4 times a week. Yesterday was a very big day of training. You know, I don't burn like 6,000 calories in a day. Well, I think it was close to 7,000, but around about 6,500-ish calories in a day. I just don't do it. It's something I don't do. So yesterday was a big day for me. So last night I went to bed. I did some painting, watched a film, chilled out. And I was like, right, I'm going to relax now. Went to bed at a good time, slept for 7.5 hours. I was in bed for about 8 hours total, but my deep sleep was rubbish. Mm-hmm. And my HRV, which is like your heart rate variability, my HRV is super low. I'm generally around, I was saying this to Joe before, but it's generally around about 45 to 52 ish. I never really go above 52. Every so often I might, if I'm super rested. I woke up this morning, I was at 32, man. Today is just this. Today is me working, and this is a lot as well. Like, this might be a lot mentally, you know. I know after I finish this, I'm going to go and eat loads of good food. I'm going to relax even more. And then tomorrow is when I'm going to be able to go and train again. I think, because I just don't feel like myself, I'd be ready, because yesterday was a big day. You know what I mean? I think I could still feel it. You know what I mean? Just I move my legs faster than I normally would, and it's like, ugh. You know what I mean? Whereas yourself...
You're ready to go again, John. Aren't you?
I'm ready to go. I'm itching to get down the gym.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, man. That's probably a good place to end.
Yeah, man. Thank you for coming on, man. Honestly,
yeah, no worries. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, cheers, man. It's been good to speak to you,
man. Honestly, you have.
Yeah, man.
You have to get you back soon.
Definite inspiration.
Yeah. Take care.
Take care, guys.